Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Monday, March 22nd meeting of the City Council. Let the record show that all council members are present, and we'll begin with a moment of silence. Thank you. Here to lead us for the pledge tonight, we have Austin Pask. Austin, would you come on up? And after you lead the pledge, if you could tell us your work here tonight. Why don't you go to the microphone, okay?
Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Austin, why don't you stay there and just tell us why you're here tonight, okay?
I am here because I am working on my Citizenship of the Community merit badge for Boy Scouts.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us. Okay. Our business that we're focusing on tonight, we have Jim Roy from Central Coast Cleaning. Jim, tell us all about your new services.
Good evening. My name is Jim Roy, and I'm a member of the Moore Bay Chamber of Commerce. My company is Central Coast Cleaning, located at 450 Medora Street in beautiful Moore Bay. My phone number is 772-3961. I am a janitorial cleaning service. I am licensed, bonded, and insured, and have almost 20 years' experience. I would be happy to give you a free estimate of your business, house, rental, vacation, home, or move out. I pride myself in doing responsible, detailed, thorough work. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We appreciate you being here. All right, and then with the council's approval, I would like to pull A4 on our consent agenda, which is the proclamation declaring April as the month of the child and child abuse prevention month, and also the day of the child. And we have a presentation that we're going to be giving. So may I hear a motion approving A4?
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay, and Susan Gayoran, right? Am I pronouncing it right?
Hi there, I'm Susan Gawaran. You got to roll that R at the end. Wow, I can't believe how fast this year is already coming along. Next month is April. It is the month of the child. And I've worked with children for over 25 years. I've worked at Rancho El Choro Outdoor School, with our state parks and rec, and I always focus my work on children because they are just so adorable and just so lovable. And now that I'm retired, I opened a small daycare here in Morro Bay, and it's so fun to live through the eyes of a child, a small child. But also, as a daycare provider, I've learned really how important it is that activities going on here in San Luis Obispo, in Morro Bay, as well as in San Luis Obispo. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Read the proclamation for you. And not all of it, but most of it. Okay. Proclaiming April 2010 as Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, and April 10th, 2010 as Day of the Child. Whereas Saturday, April 10th will commemorate the Day of the Child celebration. Express yourself, dance to the beat of your own drum during Children's Day in the Plaza from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the San Luis Obispo Mission Plaza. This is a day where children and families can play, learn, and interact with the agencies and programs providing services throughout the county. And whereas the Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month is a time to recognize that children's opportunities are our responsibilities and to commit ourselves to ensuring that each and every child experiences a high-quality early environment at home, at childcare, at school, and in the community that will promote their optimal development. Therefore, be it resolved that the City of Morro Bay is proclaiming April 2010 as the Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month and April 10th, 2010 as the Day of the Child. And there's your proclamation. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
Okay, other announcements. Going from children to seniors, we have nominees are being sought for awards to be presented as part of the Older Americans Month, May 2010, celebration activities. There are 7 award categories, and the nominations have to be in by April 19th. The categories are Senior Citizen of the Year, Senior Citizen Program of the Year, Public Official of the Year Media, Advocate of the Year, Caregiver of the Year, Older Worker of the Year, and Intergenerational Effort of the Year. I'm not sure how you define that one, but I'm sure they'll be happy to tell you. If you do want to submit someone to this, the phone number is 925-9554 to get more information on this. And I also have the nomination form here if anyone would like to pick it up at the break. Another announcement, I love announcements like this. This was forwarded to me by our chamber director, Peter Candela. The subject is Morro Bay Tire and Auto. To whom it may concern, I would like to let you know that on March 16th, while visiting my mother in Morro Bay, my rental car tire went flat. I was having trouble with the rental company between the Arizona branch and the Morro Bay branch. Neither branch had a viable solution to my flat tire. Kevin with Morro Bay Tire tried talking with them to resolve replacing the tire without any result. Kevin said, "Let's just take care of this so you can enjoy your vacation." He gave me a used tire in good condition, mounted it, and even put the spare donut tire away, all at no charge. I haven't ever heard of someone doing anything like that for an out-of-town customer before. I was absolutely speechless. I believe businesses such as these should be acknowledged for things like this because it shouts such good things about your community. Morro Bay Tire and Auto deserves such recognition. Sincerely, Eric Sauter, Mojave Valley, Arizona. I think, yeah. That's what makes Morro Bay special, and it's wonderful when people do let us know, because I'm sure things like this go on a lot, and it's just great when somebody takes the time to thank us and the business involved. So I wanted to share that good news. That's it for me. Betty, anything?
Just a piece of information that I heard over the weekend, and I would hope the chamber would pick up on this, and that is that the state campground is charging $50 a night for RVs. I didn't know if we knew that, and $35 for tents, which makes it competitive with hotel rooms. And I would think that that is, I'm assuming that would be a statewide policy, not a local policy, and that maybe that's something that we would want to address or that maybe the chamber needs to address in terms of making it our place accessible to visitors.
Okay. Rick?
Just an update on the 10-year plan in homelessness group that I serve on. They're going before the Planning Commission on May 26th. That's the San Luis Obispo City Planning Commission to address construction and operational expenses. And they're also looking to hire an executive director. So you're welcome to go to the San Luis Obispo County website and check out the prerequisites for that job. Or you can just go to Google and write in San Luis Obispo Homeless Coordinator, or it's on Craigslist also. And then we have the blood drive thing for the overhead, AGP.
It's on there.
Oh, it's on there.
Yeah.
Okay, great. That's going to be Wednesday. That's a citywide blood drive. Wednesday,
we're going to be doing a walking tour of the downtown area that's focused in Morro Bay Boulevard and also sections of Main Street. The group that participates will basically be looking at what we really like about the area, things that we think could be improved, and where we'd like to see the area go. As we get back to the community center on the 14th, it'll work more focused into a community workshop, talking about what we've done and have in the past with community visioning documents, historical documents spreading back 30 years. We'll do a check-in, review of those, and then actually start to talk about where we would like to see our downtown business district go. So it's going to be very hands-on. Very much it's dependent on active participation from our community, so everyone's welcome to come out. Should be a lot of fun, and we're going to have a follow-up workshop building on the information that's received at the first workshop. Second will be on April 28th, starting at 6 o'clock at the community center. So those two workshops, I'll say the date and time again. The first is April 14th, starting at 5 o'clock at the community center, and the second is April 28th, again at the community center. This one starts at 6 o'clock. So hope to see you out there. We're just about to start putting posters up and sending out press releases. So hopefully you'll be hearing more, and please spread the word for anyone who's interested in the downtown business district.
Okay. Carla?
Good evening. Thank you. I'm sure, are you going to talk about Dixon Spaghetti Feed?
No, go ahead.
Oh, no. Anyway, Friday night at the community center at 4, do you remember?
4 to 7.
4 to 7. Thank you. Just a reminder to everyone that benefits our community foundation for the youth programs. IWMA is the only meeting I had that I represent the city, Integrated Waste Management. The state Integrated Waste Management is now the Department of Resources, Recycling, and Recovery, Cal Recycle. And I would just want to remind everyone that we still have take-back programs for fluorescent light bulbs and batteries. Anywhere you buy them has a return program. And also when you go to the paint store or Miners, on your nifty little paint sticks now, it will tell you all about the latex paint you can return to the store, 2 gallons a week. Or 2 gallons of visit, excuse me, right on the back, and this will save us in our hazardous disposal area of paints that don't have to be disposed there. So I would encourage you all to return your latex paints that you don't use back to the hardware stores and paint stores.
Okay.
Madam Mayor,
okay.
Can I ask Mr. Smekler a question about his two meetings? Is there any way to get one of those moved to a weekend so they're both not weekdays?
At this point, we've locked in on those dates, and they will be facilitated by the Cal Poly class, so we cannot change the dates at this point. But we did decide on an evening, late afternoon date, so businesses and so on in the downtown area could make it. And if someone can't make one, they can certainly go to the other and help participate. If there are specific comments that people have, I should definitely give a contact number for myself as one of the members of the committee. You can call me if you have some input that you'd like to make sure gets carried into those workshops. My number is 772-7668. And I apologize for not having a weekend date, but you know, we can work with who, if someone does have a barrier to one of those dates, we could set up a meeting to meet directly with them to make sure that their input's heard and carried in. So we definitely are looking for input, and we'll do anything we can to get that into the process.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Then just the last, I didn't know if anyone was going to mention it, but the city council, four of us, did meet with the other cities in the county last Friday at a League of Cities meeting with three counties. I had a very nice meeting, and Abel Maldonado spoke and gave us some insight about what's going on in Sacramento, which I thought was helpful.
None of it good, unfortunately. Okay. Other announcements. Police and fire. Chief Pond, do you want to go first this time? I don't care.
I think you said Chief Fun. Anyway, thank you, Mayor and Council. Today I was honored to attend a very interesting lunch. I was thrilled to hear that the Order of the Eastern Star had invited myself and friends of the Morro Bay Fire Department, Keith Taylor and Cheryl Taylor, to this event. And they surprised us with an amazing donation to the city. And I'm not going to steal the thunder from Keith Taylor because it was to the Friends of the Morro Bay Fire Department. But I wanted to tell you a little bit of background. Myrtle Reed was the person that invited us, and her husband, Stu, had been a firefighter with the Morro Bay Fire Department for over 25 years. He had lost his sister in a fire in Morro Bay back in 1951, and when he returned from the service, he joined the fire department and participated for many, many years. But not only was his wife Myrtle at this event today, Carney Craig's wife was there, and Carney was a firefighter and a short-time chief at the Del Mar Fire Department out on Bonita Street back in the Firefighter of the Year Award. So I just wanted to say publicly that Scott Subler, one of our firefighter engineer paramedics, is just a great individual and was well-deserving of that award, and we finally did get that award to him. Last, I wanted to mention that Bob Newman, a retired San Luis City Fire Chief, is going to be teaching a community emergency response team course in our area. That's the CERT class. It'll be taught 2 days in Los Osos, 2 days at the community center, and the final will be at the Morro Bay Fire Department. And those class dates are May 4th, 6th, 11th, 13th, and 18th, and they go from 6 in the evening to 9:30, and the cost is $40. And we hope to see a big crowd out there. Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Pond, if someone's interested in signing up for that, is there a, or Chief Pond, sorry about that, is there a contact information?
Absolutely, and thank you for reminding me. It would be Carol Tuzignant at the Morro Bay Fire Department, 772-6242.
Thanks.
And Chief DeRohan.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Wednesday, May 12th at 10 o'clock in the morning is the annual police officer memorial service. It's going to be held in Tascadero at the Tascadero Veterans Hall. And I have some invitations for each of you here that I'll give you on the break. Okay. The past 3 weeks, we had a total workload of 853 incidents, 437 calls for service, 100 incident reports taken, 88 crimes reported, and we had 42 arrests. And we solved a great burglary case that you may have read in the newspaper. Somebody came here to Morro Bay that was doing, or several persons that were doing a burglary ring all around the county, and they tried to steal a generator from a pickup truck here in Morro Bay, and we caught them. So we solved numerous crimes throughout the county, and great job by our officers and one of our officers who spotted the suspect vehicle and put some bad guys in jail. And this past weekend was very busy. Day shift patrol made 11 arrests, three of them simultaneously on Saturday with a traffic collision going all at the same time. And the day shift sergeant summed it up like this in an email to his day shift employees. He said, "Bad guys and gals went to jail. No one was hurt, and the city residents enjoyed their weekend. I appreciate the way dispatch held us together. Patrol responded quickly and did thorough investigations. And our volunteer units were invaluable. You are the reason I love to do what I do, and I have never been more proud to wear the Morro Bay uniform." And that concludes my report.
Thank you. And Andrea?
Thank you, and good evening, Mayor and Council. Just a couple of things. Bridget Bauer, our city clerk, has informed me that all the candidates' nominations papers were checked and qualify for the primary election, which will be held on June 8th. Just as a reminder, we have four candidates for mayor: Rick Grantham, Betty Winholtz, Bill Yates, and Neil Farrell, and four candidates for city council: Nancy Johnson, Deanna Kennedy, George League, and Jack Smith. Another reminder to the community that you can pay your water bill online. We hope that people continue to look at the city's website and take that advantage of that possibility as well. And in the next couple of days, we'll have the new issue of the In the Loop City newsletter online for the month of March, which has some information for you. And I see Bob Schwanoa out in the audience. He's with Morro Bay High School. And I just wanted to remind the community that there's some great sports going on at Morro Bay High School right now. The high school, they've got boys baseball, girls softball, track and field, swimming and diving, which you can't see at the high school. But at the high school, a lot is happening there. So if you're looking, you have an afternoon free, stop by the high school and check out some of our student athletes. Thank you. That's all I have tonight.
Thank you. And a closed session report, Rob.
Yes, good evening. Prior to tonight's regular session, Council met on closed session on two separate items: real property transaction, which was discussed the county library property, and also Council met in closed session to discuss anticipated litigation. As to both these matters, no action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
Okay. We'll go to public hearings now, public comment now, and remember that the consideration of the transit service changes with Dial-A-Ride and the trolley, that is a public hearing, so you'll be able to speak to that directly at that time. So public comment on other issues that are not on a public hearing schedule, starting with Keith and his surprise.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff, and friends at home. My name is Keith Taylor, resident of Morro Bay, friend of the Morro Bay Fire Department. As the chief already explained, we went today to lunch with Myrtle Reed and the Eastern Star, and she's been working on this for 2 years. 2 years ago, she gave us an extremely generous donation. So she said, we have a surprise for you, and we didn't know what it was. Well, they gave to the Shriners Hospital $15,000, and they gave to the Friends of the Morro Bay Fire Department, for the fire department, they presented a check to the chief of $15,000.
Wow.
So both my wife and I just couldn't, we were shocked. And
I feel every bit as endowed to it as your citizens before you, although I don't live here. In wartime, it's accepted practice for enemy combatants to identify and eliminate the leadership of organizations in the field, knowing that if they eliminate the leaders of those armies facing them, the organization itself and the army falls apart. The decision you face before you tonight in regards to the police commander position is no less crucial. This is a leadership position. It is not about administration. It is not about paperwork. It is about the people that you entrust to preserve the constitutional rights of everyone living here in this community. And it requires effective leadership by two in command, a chief and a commander. You must preserve the current structure of leadership within the police department to preserve the quality of service that you provide to the community, that we are entrusted to be out there and do each and every day with our very lives, if needed. The chief cannot do this by himself. The chief needs someone as counsel. The chief needs someone as a second to step in when the chief must be away at other functions. Who is going to lead our department if you eliminate the commander position or propose some other plan? Who steps into those shoes? Quality police service is too important to make compromises. What you're asking for in any other plan that you ask for is a compromise. We cannot do this any longer. In 2005, this department before you addressed the budget concerns of the council at that time by adapting to a 20% budget cut and several lost officer positions. And we did that successfully because of two leaders who helped guide us through those difficult times, a police chief and a commander. I have met with several of you, and you know my position, and you know the facts. There is no budget savings. What you will have is a loss of service before you. Listen to your chief. Listen to your department experts. It's what you train us all to do, and we do it well. Make the right choice this evening and preserve the commander position as is and fill it immediately. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor, City Council, and City staff and residents. My name is Deanna Kennedy, and I'm a candidate for City Council. I wanted to make an announcement tonight that I will have a town hall meeting at the Vet Center on Friday, April 9th, from 6 to 8. It will be open to all. My staff and myself will furnish refreshments. The purpose of my town hall meeting is to allow the citizens to voice their concerns, voice their opinions, and to suggest what actions they would take, and to open the door for open communication. I wish to thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council. My name is Deborah Franklin, and I'm a volunteer for Morro Bay Beautiful. My committee nominated me to come and speak to you tonight about our fabulous citywide yard sale that's coming up the weekend of April 10th and 11th. It's going to be a fabulous event. It always is every year, and for the visitors, it features a free treasure map. We anticipate a listing of 100 or more yard sales, and we're also looking for more sign-ups, so we're hoping that everyone will be interested in coming and signing up for it. To list their fundraiser on the map, we'd like to encourage residents and nonprofit groups to sign up at the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce, the office before March 31st. A free map will be available on April 8th.
in the issue of the New Times and at Brenda Sue's consignment on Morro Bay Boulevard. During the yard sale weekend, our Lady Pirate will be visiting sales and giving away free prizes from our treasure chest. Morro Bay Beautiful supports this event as it is commerce-friendly by bringing lots of visitors to town, making purchases at local stores, restaurants, and hotels. It helps families and groups generate funds. It's also eco-friendly. It encourages recycling so the people of Morro Bay can clean out their garages and their closets and sell the items instead of sending them to the landfill.
I'm a citizen of Morro Bay, and I am here to ask you to keep the commander position as is. We're going to have a new police chief, and it would be a crime to just throw him to the wolves and not have somebody to fall back on. I work as a volunteer with the police department, so I know the importance of morale and keeping everybody on track. So please keep the commander position. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, council members, city staff, residents of Morro Bay. I'm Peter Candela, Morro Bay Chamber of Conference and Visitor Center. I'm here to talk a little bit about some of the things that are going on in our visitor center. First of all, I spoke last time about our fulfillment. Well, it hasn't really stopped. We're increasing every month. It's December was 1,000, and fulfillment is requests by visitors through magazines, the little bingo cards, if you will. They send them in to the magazine, and then we get these lists of people requesting information. That's a fulfillment. So our December fulfillment was 1,000. January was 1,100. February is 1,800, and we're already surpassing 1,400 at the visitor center right now. Now, that's a joint effort with a lot of organizations. It's the advertising agency, John Sorgenfrey. TJ Advertising does the marketing for Morro Bay. It's also the Promotions Committee. It's the Morro Bay Business Improvement District. And it's the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce, all working together to be able to handle this type of workload. And there's a lot involved when you're looking at fulfilling 2,000 pieces of information and printing it at the same time and then answering the phones and going through that. So it's a working mechanism that I feel it's difficult to find meshing like this. Because of all of this activity, we're going to open up the visitor center on Sundays from 10 to 2. We're going to start it that way. I can see an increase in our visitors count coming in. There's always a lag, and I think we should just be ready for a great number of visitors coming into our area. So we want to be prepared for that as well. A quick announcement, Tall Ships, Lady Washington will be coming in November 22nd and the 23rd, so that's good news. So we're going to do a tremendous advertising campaign regarding that. Also, real quick, when visitors come in, they anticipate our streets to be safe. They anticipate certain things from Morro Bay because they've been coming for years and years. Commander Timoleous and John DeRohan have done an incredible job working with what they have. Eliminating one of those positions is a scary thought. It's just something I know that the council is looking at, and I know that you'll be looking at it very closely. So just a word. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and council members. Vicki Landis, and I know that you've heard me speak before, but I'll still try to take every opportunity, so thank you for offering them. I am here to talk to you about the commander position. Not Commander Tim Olivas, because you've heard what a wonderful guy he is. That's one person. We're talking about the actual position that Tim has been fabulous at holding, and there'll be another person that I hope you'll allow to fill that position. When we made the switch a few years ago and the plan was to have Chief DeRohan and Commander Olivas, it was so that we never had to go outside of our community to find a leader again, that we could have someone that had that integrity, that had that continuity of what our community is about and that feel. That's what keeps Morro Bay safe, and that's what keeps Morro Bay a proactive and friendly, positive police department, not a reactive, negative one. And I can't tell you how fast that could happen. So please, no matter what you're looking at, the commander position is critical. Somebody has to police the police, and a good leader is how that happens, or you know, things get a little out of hand, or can, especially when people are overworked and you know, just carrying all double hats all the time. So please consider it. I know you've got a lot to do, and I think the situation's worse financially than we thought even a year ago. So the sad part, I think, is that if you make the right decision, it'll be transparent. If you make the wrong decision, it's going to have this community suffering for years to come. So please consider that. Keep that position open. Keep us going and keep us safe and keep that good community, the positive stuff that we all know we can have in Morro Bay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council, and staff. As advancement, we've got at least two officers now who are qualified to step into that role. And if this position is eliminated, I'm afraid, and I serve as a chaplain in the department, I see how busy they are, I see how much they work, I'm afraid we may down the road lose some of these guys because of career advancement. So I know you're looking at this. We're praying for you. We have asked God to give you wisdom and discernment as you look at this. But I would encourage you, don't look at the bottom dollar, because I believe if you look at it pragmatically, hiring people from the outside to come in and help in the IA-type situations, there's not going to be a savings. And I think we need to look at the department, the morale, the recruitment, the career advancement, and what they do well. And Tim and John have done an amazing job. And as it's been said, I think eliminating that position isn't fair to our new chief next month when he takes over. So I just encourage you to do the right thing, and that would keep the position. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Honored Council, friends and neighbors. My name is Manny Silva, Morro Bay Peace Officers Association, 31 years with the police department. Just want to come down and talk to you a little bit this evening about the commander position. When I started about 30 years ago, we were a lot smaller agency, and the type of calls and the volume of calls for service that we had, we could have gotten by with an administrative sergeant in those days. Times have changed. The complexity of the type of investigations that we have these days, internal affairs, liability issues, cannot get by with an admin sergeant. Can't be done. I wish I could say otherwise. I've been here 30 years. I've seen Morro Bay change so much. I wish it could go back to the way it was, but we can't do that. I'll give you an example. The other night we had an incident the chief was talking about. There were two of us on it, three suspects. We called for assistance from the sheriff's office, two deputies covering the coast, all of San Luis Obispo Rural and Avila Beach, all the way up to the Ragged Point line, just two guys. Took them a while to get there, and I understand they're short-staffed too. But the commander position is more than just an administrator in the office. It has become a de facto incident commander, an assistant or a backup detective, if you will. It's become very crucial to us since the loss of the five positions 5 years ago. I'm not sure if we cut this position how we're going to do it. I really don't. I don't think we can operate. I would really urge you to think strongly about this. I know you do your best. I know you're fighting some big money issues, and I thank you. I'm sorry that you have to go through this, but I do hope you'll give it some serious thought. And thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm going to encourage everyone. We have 10 more people in line, and if you all do 30 minutes, it's going to be 30 minutes. So if you can speed it up, I'd really appreciate it. If you're saying the same thing that somebody else has said, just say it, and thank you very much, okay?
Claire Grantham, resident, president of Friends of the Police and a police volunteer, and I'll be very short because they've all said it so well. Just want to, you know, we really don't want to be the lowest paid police department, the only one without a commander. I just want you to think really long and hard, and I think what Sergeant Millard said about this being a leadership position, to focus on the leadership part of it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Melody DeMerritt, resident of Morro Bay, former council member. And I have a different topic, so I'll take 3 minutes. It's about the primary. Everybody knows I'm not a big fan of the primary. And, in fact, I think it's a bane on the city to have all those signs out at Memorial Day holiday. But one of the things that was promised by it was this great throng of democracy. And all these people would run. Well, in the first primary, so many people ran for council. It was kind of amazing, actually. And then 4 of them went forward to November, as you recall. So I was kind of thinking about it over the weekend, and Bridget, I've contacted Bridget for who's running because of some other things that I'm working on in my life. And it came to my understanding that there are only 4 people running for council. Now, I would just suggest to you that I think it's worthy of a council discussion with your attorney or your city clerk, or even agendizing this as a discussion, that these 4 people are going to have their town halls. They're going to pay their 4 or 5 grand to run for council. They're going to have their advertisements due. They're going to be walking the neighborhoods if they're not nuts, because that's what you do in Morro Bay. And then, who gets to go on to the November election?
My name is Jamie Irons, resident of Morro Bay. I'm here to speak about our trail day from last week, and there's some slides going up right now. I'll speak quickly about it. Briefly, we had 30 volunteers that showed up. We met at Las Tunas at La Loma. We did brush clearing, water erosion correction. You can see on the slides, perhaps as we're coming up to them, you'll see some of the work that's being done and some of the erosion from the rain. I just wanted to express thanks to all the volunteers that came out there. 30 volunteers equated to 90 man hours, so it was a really good day. It exceeded what I thought we would get done. Also, for people that might be interested in this, and for the neighbors that do go around Black Hill and participate on that mountain and enjoy it, you'll see some of the scenes coming up just from some of the vistas from Black Hill. That's some work on the summit trail, some water that's going down the trail. That's just a peek at the vista right there from Black Hill. So please encourage you to enjoy that. And if any of you are interested in more knowledge on the volunteer trail work, you can look up Central Coast Concerned Mountain Bikers, and we hope to see you at the next trail day. Thanks very much.
Great. Thank you for all that hard work.
Good evening. I have an entirely different topic, although we've talked about it before. Dear Mayor, Council, and our vast audience out there, I'm Nancy Johnson, and I think I'm your best choice for City Council. But tonight I'm here to talk to you about the last Council meeting where I sat and listened to all the testimony and public comment regarding medical marijuana dispensaries in Morro Bay. After that, I was out and about town a lot, as I usually am, and that was the big question I got from my friends and neighbors and people who came up to me. Do you really want this in Morro Bay? And we know that the sale and distribution of medical marijuana is against the federal law. I realize that the state of California has said that it's legal, and the federal government currently promises not to prosecute. Yet, it remains against the law, and whether we like it or not, state and city governments are subservient to the federal government. So I'm asking you, without thinking about the possibilities of whether it's really good for you or not, I think that needs to come out of the equation. What I'm asking you for is to please submit an advisory vote on the ballot. You can do that at City Council. And just simply ask the citizens of Morro Bay, do they want one or more medical marijuana dispensaries in town? I think then, if you still want to stick your necks out and try this thing against the law, it's up to you. But let the citizens speak on this issue. There certainly are a lot of questions out there about it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Bob Schwanoa, Dean of Students at Morro Bay High School. I'll keep it short. We need a police commander.
That was great. Thank you. They hardly got their banners in the air.
Good evening, folks. Ken Vestafel, resident of Morro Bay. Briefly, got our car show coming up. I'd like to thank the Follies of Morro Bay for helping reduce some of the city fees that are involved. On the commander's position, quite frankly, I'm surprised that we're even talking about this. 2 years ago, Management Partners, a professional group, did a study that clearly showed that the police department is under budget, is understaffed. That was 2 years ago. It's very difficult to attract officers with the pay scale. Study says the city was having difficulty maintaining service standards. Our budget is the second lowest next to Fort Bragg. Our management is tied with Fort Bragg and Half Moon Bay with two managers. All the other agencies in the county, in the area, have more than that. We have more calls for service than any other city that has our same population. Please investigate the workload. I don't know how many have been down there to do that, but I believe that Councilman Rick Grantham has been down there constantly. I believe there are council people on this presently on the council have not really investigated what the management team does there.
Let it go. But what's in item A3 is a status on the state water situation. We've had a lot of people say, you know, it's bad news, bad news, bad news about water, but it's actually good news right now, and it was something that was predicted before. The 5% allocation has been raised to 15%. What wasn't in the report was that they said it'll probably be raised between 35 and 45% before the end of this year. So it looks like the state water is going to come through once again, and we can get some of the chlorine out of our water, and everybody's going to be happy about that. On the second item, we've had some folks complaining about the primary system. Now, what I find curious about this is we have four candidates for mayor. Okay, now, if we didn't have the primaries, we could have somebody get elected with 26% of the vote if the vote got split otherwise. So presumably the primary is a good thing in that case. And in the other case, you know, I think that what goes on in a primary, it's not the same race twice. Some people get eliminated. And frankly, it's my prediction, John makes a prediction, that at least one of the council people will be elected in June. And then we will have a runoff between the next best two best candidates in November. The end result will be that the citizens of Morro Bay will get the best candidates, the ones they like best, and all will be well. So as far as the issue of the horror of running two campaigns, in the first campaign, the successful candidates will be able to identify their supporters, they'll have their signs, they'll have the issues worn out, and then in the final election, it can be more on the issues, and I think that's a good thing for the citizens, and I'm sorry if it's a little harder on the candidates, but it's better for the town, and it's better for the citizens. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council. I'm going to speak on another topic. I'm a health educator with the County of San Luis Obispo Tobacco Control Program.
And what's your name?
Amber Allewine.
Thank you.
And I wanted to educate you guys on something that happened a couple weeks ago. We had a tobacco compliance check with the help of the police department, who were outstanding and very easy to work with. And I just wanted to let you guys know that. Out of the 16 retailers, there were five that sold, and 11 didn't sell. So we have certificates to the retailers who didn't sell to minors. We want to congratulate those who are following the law. That's a 31% sales rate for Morro Bay. So if youth can't buy cigarettes, we're trying to prevent that. They won't start smoking. They won't give them away. They won't sell them. So that is a problem of 31% sales rate. There is a moment when they do sell. I go in. I educate them how to avoid fines and penalties when selling to a minor. That's the purpose of our department, to be with the police department at that time, is to go in, educate, offer any training we can so they are following the law. And right now the smoking rate for 11th graders is 19% here in Morro Bay. The California rate is 14.6, and San Luis Obispo County is 15.4%. And if you're familiar with the California Healthy Kids Survey, last year they did, one of the questions was, is tobacco easy to get? And 73% of 11th graders thought it was easy to get. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, Mayor Peters and Council. My name is Christina Lefebvre, and I'm also with the Public Health Department Tobacco Control Program. I'm going to follow up on what Amber spoke about. I'm here to talk to you about what we can do to help decrease youth access and youth smoking here in Morro Bay. Every day in California, nearly 300 children take up smoking. Of those, 200 will go on to become addicted, and half of those will prematurely die because they smoked. Most of the 42,000 Californians who die from smoking-related causes started before they were a legal age to purchase tobacco. The younger they start smoking, the greater the addiction, and the likelier it is they'll die from a tobacco-related disease. While California law has long prohibited the sale of tobacco to minors, compliance checks in the County of San Luis Obispo demonstrate, like the one here in Morro Bay, that businesses continue to sell to underage kids. Generally, there are two ways that youth gain access to tobacco: social sources, like their friends or family, and retail sources, like convenience stores or grocery stores. Since it's nearly impossible to monitor the social sources, action must be taken to control illegal sales in the retail environment. To address this problem, more than 70 cities across the state, including several here in our county and the county, have taken action to pass local tobacco retail licensing ordinances, decreasing youth access to tobacco in their communities. A TRL ordinance, which we call it, requires store owners to purchase an annual permit in order to sell any tobacco product or paraphernalia. The permit fee covers the cost for administration of the license and, more importantly, the enforcement. We've talked a lot here tonight about enforcement. The enforcement equals merchant community education and several youth purchase stings per year. If a store owner or clerk is caught in violation of the ordinance, the store owner could be fined or the license could potentially be suspended or revoked.
I'm a San Luis Obispo resident, but I'm the co-chair for the Tobacco Control Coalition, which is a countywide organization of volunteer members to support tobacco control programs goals. And so clearly I'm here to ask for that you would agendize and then support a tobacco retail license ordinance for here in Morro Bay. As Amber told us, the sting results from this month were dismal. The stores here in Morro Bay sold products to youth at a rate of 31%, and the state average is less than half that. It's 14%. This high rate of sales happened despite the fact that very recently we did a pretty comprehensive educational campaign to train clerks and managers of their responsibilities in selling tobacco products at these stores. A tobacco retail license is not asking for anything more than as a means to ensure that the law of not selling products to minors is enforced. And this is a really important law because most people that start smoking, they start in their teens. In California, 300 children will pick up cigarettes a day, and two-thirds of them will become addicted in a frustrating addiction that leads to debilitating and deadly consequences. We know that one of our very best strategies to prevent youth tobacco use is to make the products hard to come by. But based on the results from our stings here locally, it seems that the law just doesn't have enough teeth in it. So passing a tobacco retail agendizing and considering this tobacco retail license ordinance would mean that for a nominal fee, the local stores that do sell tobacco products would have that nominal fee, and at no cost to our city, we can provide more consistent evaluation and enforcement of a law that will save lives. think that a tobacco retail license here in Morro Bay is a very easy opportunity for you to advocate for our youth, and I hope that you'll support it. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Good evening, Council and Mayor. Thanks for taking my comment. Joan Solu, and I live in Morro Bay. I'm here for two reasons tonight, and we'll start with the first. I'm the PTA president at Del Mar School, and I just wanted to thank you and the entire community for coming out to our event and having us help us have another successful event yesterday at our fourth annual art auction and barbecue. There were several of the council members there, and I'm grateful for the donations that your businesses made and the purchases that you made and your generosity of spirit and your kindness of heart in giving to the children. Also to our police chief and fire chief for supporting the event through the Ride of a Lifetime and in several other ways. We are grateful to our community services officers, the Mulliners for bringing the cow out. We are really happy that we had some excellent gentlemen smoking up our barbecue grill and providing a great lunch for everyone. And we are thrilled to have had artists, local artists like Nancy Hill and Brad Hill and Nancy Sands provide us with some beautiful artwork, Don Bubbledy, and some wonderful community spirit. Secondly, I'd like to say to you, switching gears, no longer PTA, I'm not here on any official capacity, but I do sit on your TBID board. And I would like to just say to you that in hearing from some folks who have watched the budget meeting, they were talking about, they were addressing me about the fact that there was some interest in combining the TBID board, the community promotions board, and the visitor center somehow. And I would just say to you that the TBID is formed of the hotels and is an assessment on the hotels by themselves, meaning we assess ourselves an additional percentage on the TOT tax. And that is to be used by the TBID board and the assessees to promote their businesses through advertising and in other ways. And we are an appointed board by you, but in addition to that, our bylaws are approved annually by those that are assessed, and we need to be careful to check the bylaws if we are going to make any changes to the board, because that would mean going back on vote to each one of those individuals that is assessed. So I would ask that we're careful and that we keep a close eye on which direction we're going with that. And then thirdly, on your police commander, I would just ask that you really visit that topic hard. I believe that Commander Levis is moving up when Chief DeRohan departs. Sorry to see you go. And but congratulations on your retirement. And I would ask that you give Commander Levis a chance to get in there and get his feet wet and really discover what he wants to do with his department. And if that's what he needs for your support, then I ask that you give it to him at that time. But let him make a decision. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Anyone else?
I wouldn't have the ability, just because there's four that are running, be able to cancel the primary on that.
There is okay, but only two go on?
Yes, because there would only be one other spot available. So, yes, one could get eliminated in the primary.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Did you have another question, Carla? Okay. Right, 51%. I understand that, but I just didn't know how it would. No, that's not it. Bridget, do you have more information for us? 50% plus one could elect someone at the primary, after which two other top vote-getting candidates would vie for the other seat.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So hopefully that's clear for everybody.
The likelihood of that is very slim.
Right.
When you have four people.
Yeah. Even if it's less than 1%, you still don't have the ability to. Council wouldn't have the ability to make that decision not to have it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We'll take a short break, and we'll come back with our public hearing items. Thank you. We're back, AGP. All right. Okay, we're going to start with our public hearing items, and the first one, you'd have thought I could have had it in front of me during all that time, wouldn't you? Is condition of the proposed transit service changes. And Janine, you got this one.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. As you mentioned tonight, you have before you a public hearing for consideration of proposed transit service changes. Originally, this was just supposed to be talking about the future changes for next fiscal year. However, with a pretty recent notice from the Council of Governments of a second funding cut to this fiscal year, part of the staff report will also be addressing that funding shortfall that we got notice on March 11th and some options for addressing that within this fiscal year. So with that, I'd like to start with just a little quick history of how transit services are funded. I think the council is pretty much knowledgeable about that, but just for the members of the public, the state receives Transportation Development Act funds for transportation programs. There's two different funding sources. There's local transportation funds, or LTF, and state transit assistance funds, or STA. And these funds are the LTF funds are generated from a percentage of sales tax, and the STA funds are generated through a sales tax on fuel. And as everybody is aware, the economy has been down for a number of years now, and that has had an impact to the amount of LTF funding available to the state and to the region and to the city. With people not spending a lot of money, sales tax isn't being generated at the levels they once were, which means there's less funding to apportion out to the communities. The other issue is with STA and the governor's proposal to eliminate the sales tax on fuel, which would eliminate the STA funding source for local transit operations. There has been some legislation that was passed and was on the governor's desk, which would be a little less bad in that it would be, they're calling it a gas tax swap, where the elimination of the tax on gasoline would occur, but not on diesel. So there would be a small funding pool to provide STA for local operations. I heard late Thursday, but I haven't been able to confirm whether or not it's the case that the governor was going to veto that bill. So what that means is that for STA, that funding source for this fiscal year and for potentially the future has been eliminated and may not come back. And then right now the only funding source left is the local transportation fund, which has seen decreases starting about 2 years ago for fiscal year 2007-2008. The funding decrease was a little more than 12% at that time start of the fourth quarter of that fiscal year. And the Council of Governments backfilled it with some discretionary STA funding that they had available so that the dial-a-ride service could remain whole through the fiscal year. In the last fiscal year, 2008-2009, there was another funding cut in the middle of the fiscal year, and that was a 10% funding cut, as well as a 50% cut to the state transit assistance. The City Council had requested from the Council of Governments to convert a rural transit fund grant, a capital grant that it received for vehicle replacement, to use those funds instead for operations so that the dial-a-ride service could remain whole for the remainder of that fiscal year. And in this fiscal year, in December, the city received notice that there was going to be a funding cut for 2009-2000. Since April of 2008, the city has lost more than $171,000 of transit funding. And as I mentioned before, some of these losses have been backfilled with other funding sources, but that is not something that can continue to occur in the future. In looking at the budget for next fiscal year, if you're looking at just at the current fiscal year operating cost for Dial-A-Ride alone, it's about $379,000. And the funding available in LTF prior to this March 11th cut was about $204,000. So it's readily apparent that the existing levels of dial-a-ride service cannot be maintained beyond this fiscal year. So as the city's beginning to develop the budgets for next fiscal year, the question becomes what, if any, type of dial-a-ride service can be provided with the funding that is being apportioned from the state to the city. Staff's basically looked at several different options, three of which are part of your staff report tonight. The first being looking at dial-a-ride service and giving the funding availability from the state. How far back would the city have to cut in order to maintain a dial-a-ride type service? And the news was kind of sobering in that regard. What it looked like was that in order to maintain a dial-a-ride type service, we would have to reduce service hours by 80% and cut to one day a week from the current five-day-a-week schedule. What this would do is would result in about 83% of the current ridership not being able to receive any type of local transit service. As you know, the dial-a-ride service is an on-demand, so there's only a limited number of seats available with a limited number of spaces available throughout the day with which to schedule rides. In addition, the fare box ratio is estimated to be at 3.5%, which is well below the Transportation Development Act, the state minimum or mandated requirement of 10%. And what can occur when you fall below that 10% is funding can be withheld until actions are taken that would bring you up to that 10% mandated level. So staff really didn't think that this was an option that was viable because you would have this large gap in service. You'd be reducing the amount of service available to the current riders, and you wouldn't be reaching the fare box ratio that's mandated by the state. A second option, which was looked at, which was kind of looked at before the reduction of service hours, was establishing a fixed route service that would mirror the existing dial-a-ride service hours and then reduce the dial-a-ride to one vehicle providing service Monday through Friday, but on a shortened schedule to about 8 hours a day. Under this option, the funding shortfall is estimated about $287,000 after your fares and revenues for advertising are factored in. And while the trolley fare box ratio would be estimated at 21.7%, the dial-a-ride component, that fare box ratio would be estimated at 6.6%, so it's still below the 10% required minimum ratio. The management partners report that the council adopted a couple of years ago had two recommendations in there that related to transit, the first being relating specifically to the summer trolley program and the desire to eliminate general fund support from that program, so in other words, making it a self-sufficient program. And the other recommendation related to the enterprise fund, the transit enterprise fund, which relates to the dial-a-ride, and that all enterprise funds, and in this case the transit enterprise fund, should be self-sufficient as well. So the first option of reducing service to one day a week, the second option to change to a fixed route and reducing dial-a-ride to one vehicle with a shortened schedule would not fit under those recommendations, as you still would have a funding shortfall that, you know, potentially you'd be looking at general fund support or not, and the council has expressed a desire to not have general fund support for these services. So the third option that was looked at was to establish a year-round fixed-route service that would replace the dial-a-ride service. And what this would do, and it's outlined in Exhibits A, B, and C of your staff report, is to create a fixed route that would essentially take what is the existing summer north and downtown route, so providing the north and south of the community service, combining those into one fixed route, Regional Transit Authority. And the seven cities and the county have a joint powers agreement that originally created the Regional Transit Service to provide two functions, the regional interconnectivity among the communities, and then the second function would be to be this the ADA paratransit provider for the county. In addition, there is also a ride-on senior shuttle that operates 2 days a week that is available for service as well in the Morro Bay region that would provide door-to-door service. There's also a medical shuttle that ride-on provides that is, while it's general public, the cost is a little bit, might be a little bit prohibitive for the general public, but there are, for those who qualify, I think it's for Medi-Cal and SenCal, the insurance for those individuals covers the transit cost. So those are some other transit options available to the community as well. With this option, it's estimated that there would be no funding shortfall after the fares and advertising revenues are factored in, and the trolley fare box ratio would be estimated at over 21%, which is above the 10% mandated requirement of TDA. And in addition, this option would achieve two of the management partners' study recommendations for eliminating the general fund support for the summer trolley service, as well as making the transit enterprise fund self-sufficient. With regards to fares, just want to back up for a moment and talk briefly about a dial-a-ride type service is one of the most expensive types of transit service because of certain costs that are associated with it that aren't associated with other types of service like a fixed route service. The dispatching function is one of those components. Whether you keep your same operating days Monday through Friday but cut back to one vehicle during the day, you still have a dispatcher that's required to be there, and that fixed cost is still associated with that. If you have a fixed route service, the dispatching function is not a needed function for that type of service, so that fixed cost component gets eliminated from the cost for operation. So as fixed route services are less expensive to operate, their fares generally are less expensive than a dial-a-ride fare. And what's being proposed is a fare structure, a regular and discount fare structure that is identical to the other fixed routes services that are provided within the county, the regional service, slow transits, local service, SCAT in the South County, the North County Shuttle, and the Paso Express, which runs just in Paso Robles. The regular fare is being proposed at $1.25 per ride, with a discount fare being proposed at 60 cents per ride. And this is in order to ensure consistency among the different transit providers. There was a region-wide fare improvement study that was conducted and completed in November of 2008 that looked at all of the different fare policies among all the different transit providers to see what fares are being charged, what the senior category is, how do you find children, disabled, and so on, and was recommending policies that would work towards that consistency so that if a rider is transferring from a regional system into a local system, they would know that if I'm 65 on the regional system and get a discount fare, that when I transfer over to the local system and I'm 65, it's the same to the same category. With regard to other types of the fare media relating to fare passes, a day pass, right now we have a punch pass, whether we want to offer a year-round youth pass. What staff would like to do is come back to the Public Works Advisory Board and the Council in April once a more thorough evaluation of other transit providers and their pass structure and their fare media structures is provided to come back with a specific program for recommendation for the city. What I'd like to do is move on now to the latest reduction to LTF that we were noticed in March 11th about, and talk about some of the options that are available for council with which to address those issues in this fiscal year. As I mentioned previously, the city was notified on March 11th of a second reduction to LTF in this fiscal year, which has about 3 months remaining. The funding reduction is in the amount of $24,600, and there's three options available to the council. One is the first being to reduce service hours by a certain by 2 months, actually, what it ends up being. Once you take into consideration some cost savings from stopping of the Dial-A-Ride service for the remaining 2 months, and the difference between that and implementing the trolley service, there would be some cost added on to starting those services early. But the difference in cost between the two, less the funding cut, would result in a small amount remaining that would be proposed to be used, general accumulation funds of about $5,600 to fund the difference. And what this would mean is that there would be no gap in local service between if you're looking at cutting service for Dial-A-Ride in starting in May to when the proposed transit service changes for next fiscal year would take place. And you'd be able to start the fixed route service a couple of months earlier, or actually 4 months earlier than originally proposed. Due to the recession and changes in the state budget regarding transit funding, as I mentioned, Morro Bay Dial-A-Ride has lost $171,000 in the last 2 years with which to operate service. The anticipated shortfall for next fiscal year is a little over $143,000. And it's readily apparent that existing Dial-A-Ride services cannot be provided at that level. As such, staff is recommending the establishment of a year-round fixed-route trolley service that would replace the Dial-A-Ride service as outlined in Exhibits A, B, and C. And in addition, staff is recommending that the council provide direction with regard to how to address the latest funding decrease that the city was notified on March 11th for the little over $24,000 funding cut. What I'd like to do is turn this back over to the council to conduct the public hearing and take any questions from the council and direction on a motion.
Okay. Rick?
Hi, Janine. When we spoke earlier, I failed to ask you one thing, and if you answer me, it'll probably help clear up a few other questions. But could you explain what the fare box ratio is?
The fare box ratio, it's a ratio of fares to operating expenditures. So the state has 10%, for rural areas, has a mandated 10% fare box ratio. So that means for an existing service, you generate a set number of fares per year, and you divide that by the cost to operate that service, and that's what you get that percentage.
Okay, and I know the other enterprise funds in the city have accumulation funds, but transit enterprise doesn't have accumulation funds. Is that
correct? Does not. It uses all of the, the Transportation Development Act, the LTF portion, is for a certain amount. Then there's some takeoffs of the top. So the regional transit service contribution from the city, that comes off the top. There's a 2% required bike path pedestrian set aside that's required. And so what's remaining of that LTF amount is used for transit operations. And previously the city has used all of that to operate the Dial-A-Ride service. So there's no funding that's set aside in a reserve. And my understanding from the Administrative Services Director is that the state generally doesn't like to see you carrying over balances from year to year. They want you to use those funds.
Okay. And you spoke briefly about, the different levels, like the runabout being able to do the disabled and because of ramps and such. And you mentioned something about the more of an ambulance type that you actually charge, or do you charge Medicare or Medicaid for that?
Our existing services, we don't have an insurance reimbursement.
But you said there was one category where you had enhanced transportation for people?
Ride-On Transportation currently provides a medical shuttle, and my understanding is that it is a general public medical shuttle that can take you to your medical appointments. It's a door-to-door type service. However, for the general public, it was something like $28 per ride. Mm-hmm. However, they do have an insurance reimbursement for, I think it's Medi-Cal and SenCal. So if you are an individual that has one of those types of state programs, the ride is then paid for by your medical
100%.
Insurance. I don't know if it's 100% or if it's just a heavily discounted.
Do we have much of a call for that type of transportation?
We do have medical trips for local, for visits to local doctors. I don't know to what percentage, whether that's a high number or not, but we do take some passengers to local doctors.
I will add one thing there. I did have a call from someone who said that she and her husband had to go to two doctors in San Luis Obispo.
Additional fares. That doesn't change the fare box ratio much. I mean, it may bump it up a 0.5% to a percent, mm-hmm. but it's not going to get you something that's going to get you up to that 10%.
Okay. Other questions? Danny, anything?
No? I just had a, I think it's more of a clarification, but our daily ridership at this point with Dial-A-Ride is, as I recall, about 150 rides.
That was from the Public Works Advisory Board, and that was a number that was sticking in my mind. But Susan Brown, the project manager, says that it's between 120 to 130.
Mm-hmm. Susan's in the audience, so she's nodding her head.
So about 125. Okay. And that's with two or three buses operating.
That is two buses operating during peak hours, which generally are from 7:30 in the morning till about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, with the exception during the lunchtime hour, where only one vehicle is in operation. As one driver is having lunch, the other driver is providing service, and then they switch.
Okay. And as part of our exchange over email today, it was mentioned that we have potentially a new shuttle bus in the waiting that was funded by stimulus funds. And at this point, we haven't received that yet. You had a concept, if we weren't going to utilize that, of making it available to someone else who was. But my question is more focused at our existing fleet, and what is the general mechanical condition of that existing fleet, and are you feeling like we have a quality fleet there, that if we find a way to continue the dial ride, that its abilities to continue on in service is good?
From a maintenance standpoint, it certainly is. There's requirements of state and federal law for inspections to take place every 30 days, or actually it's every 45 days or 3,000 miles. So these vehicles, as public transit vehicles, are looked at quite a bit and are maintained very well.
Okay, thanks.
Carla, any questions? All right, this is a public hearing, so if you'd like to speak on this subject, please come forward.
Good evening, Council. Thank you for taking my comment. Joan Solu is my name, and I heard option A, B, C, and now I'd like to give you option D. Get ready. It's not a big stretch for you. Here's what you do, in my mind, as a business person, using business accounting and a business format. I would take the buses and fleet that you have that are in good service. I would put this entire process out to bid for a private company to come in and run this as a private service, not reducing your ridership capabilities and your service capabilities. Why would I do that? Because you could make money on the rental, and you could continue to provide the service that you're providing probably for less than $379,000 a year. You could put something in there where you cap your fare increases, kind of like they do rent control in New York City. This could all work to the benefit of the public, and I suggest that you look at an option D. In addition to that, I would say to you, if you're looking at a fixed route service, I encourage you, each as fit young adults, to go out to the corner of Main Street and, oh, I don't know, what's the one right there behind Ocean View Furniture by Domino's Pizza? And I would encourage you to take that and walk up that street all the way to COA and go over
Laurel and go up Conejo and walk that with your fit heart and your young body, and then come back to the next council meeting and report to us how wonderful you felt, and then imagine yourself being a second grader and having legs that come up to my knee and making that same journey home from Del Mar School on a fixed route. Or imagine yourself, instead of having your 15-year-old hearts, having a heart that would be 86 years old and making that same route. So I encourage you to look at who your ridership is when you're making these decisions, and possibly look at a plan D. You could make money with your rental, you could provide service, and it could work out. So don't nix it before you try it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Janet Gould, the principal of Del Mar Elementary, and I just ask that as you consider this issue this evening, you keep in mind how important Dial-A-Ride is to the students of Del Mar Elementary. We have students who, and families who use that service on a daily basis. We do anything to help save this very, very valuable program to the students of Morro Bay. And one other thing is, even if we were to get the bus to Del Mar and we were to work out the supervision issues of the bus showing up 10 to 20, 30 minutes after we let students out, then when they get to the location of the fixed route, how do they get from that spot to their house? Because, again, it wouldn't be door-to-door service. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Once again, good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. There's a human element to all of this.
Your
John
name.
Barta. There's a human element to all of this, and this is the kind of thing that the government struggles with. It's popular to say waste, fraud, and abuse. Let's get rid of waste, fraud, and abuse. Well, you guys are up here now making tough decisions, and it's the hard part, but it's the right part. And so when people come to you and say, well, get rid of the waste, fraud, and abuse, you know, they're not thinking it through. They're not thinking about the elderly folks that need to get from point A to point B in our community. And, I just want to say good luck up here. Thanks for being there.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Barbara Dorr. Own a home in Morro Bay. Currently, I'm a legal resident of Redondo Beach, but my heart is here, and we will be back. Watched your Public Works Advisory Board last week. My husband and I came to the meeting to express our opinion. The next morning, we went to the meeting, the public meeting that was held at the community center, where there were three Dial-A-Ride dependent users that were there. So I'm here just to say a little bit more. First thing that I'd really like to comment on is I understand that there's been extensive noticing, posting, the libraries, public works department, maybe on the vehicles, but you have a captive audience, and that 35,000 a year riders, if you gave a small sheet of paper to each of them to let them know that the Dial-A-Ride services are going to be canceled, eliminated, terminated, not just a change in transit. And that brings me to really my first point. I think the language that is used does not express what's actually the discussion before you, which is elimination of Dial-A-Ride. I believe you should re-notice everything, and you should show that it is a cancellation of the Dial-A-Ride services. You have your public hearing notice. You have your public hearing, which is now, but you also have another agenda item, which is a contract that you plan to enter into. And that one talks about the recommendation being approved two-year extension of the current Morro Bay Dial-A-Ride and trolley operations and management agreement. If there's no Dial-A-Ride, you're not going to have a contract, so I think you should cancel that item, and you should redo your public hearing, and you shouldn't hurry along so rapidly because it might be hard walking up where the businesswoman that was here earlier talked about. But the fixed route will come along Piney. And send that 15-year-old or my 4-year-old grandson walking from Piney up Ridgeway and way up onto the hill and Arcadia. And, you know, the seniors aren't going to be able to do it. And from my understanding from the other meetings, 48% of your ridership is handicapped and seniors. This is an extremely vital service that this city provides. I checked in Redondo when I was there, and they're not canceling their dial-a-ride. They also have a fixed route, but they have their dial-a-ride services. Maybe a consortium with some other cities, you know, some way to keep it. And I did talk to the director of the preschool, where my grandson goes, and she mentioned the dial-a-ride services for the young people at Del Mar. That, you know, that's critical. But it's a critical community service. Okay. Let's find the notes and not wander. Okay. And the demographics, I think you should look to your demographics. Should look to your in-lieu parking fees, see if they can be continued to use or use some more. There's green grants for hybrid electric vehicles, for buses. The last thing in the world you should do is sell your dial-a-ride vehicles. That is so short-sighted.
Okay, thank
you. And the summer trolley is costing $66,000. Don't do that. I know that's critical. We used that when we were campers at Morro Dunes. So thank you very much.
Okay. Anyone else?
Nancy Johnson, citizen of Morro Bay, among other things. Wow, this has been really informative. You know, we tend to think about dial-a-ride as our older citizens needing to get to doctor's appointments or store or things like that. But then Joan came up and...
So I don't know if this is something that Joan Solu was aware of or she has a different type of contract arrangement that she was talking about.
Well, I think she's talking about without city subsidies.
I'm not aware of any other public agencies that have a transit service that is provided without public transit subsidies of some sort. Aileen Gyo with the Council of Governments is here in the audience, and I may put her on the spot if she's aware of any type of service like that that's out there. But beyond that, I'm not aware of something like that that currently exists.
Okay.
Follow-up question to that. When was the last time we released a competitive RFP for the contract?
The current contract, we're in an extension period that was done for the Transit Efficiencies Group that was from the Council of Governments to put together to look at seeing if there were some ways to gain some transit efficiencies either through consolidation or coordination of things like dispatching or sharing project managers or maintenance functions and whatnot. That committee has not completed its work, and that work will not be completed for this fiscal year. So that was the current extension. That was a 2-year and then the 3-year. So it's been probably about 7 years. To just talk or just – well, actually, I won't speak to the contract issue any further than that because I'd like to address that under the other item. As far as talking with the city's performance auditor, we have a required triennial performance audit that was currently has currently been undertaken, and a draft report is being prepared. And in discussions with the performance auditor, one of the recommendations that's being worked on relates to going out to bid within a time frame, a certain time frame, in order to get that public bid process underway. And the recommendation is 2 years, but we could shorten that to 1 year recommendation to fit within that. But the idea behind that was since we were looking at transitioning to an entirely different way of providing transit service after the fiscal year had started, we didn't want to go through a bid process at the same time of making those transitions and wanted to get the new transit services underway before doing the bid process.
And I'll add a bit of information to your, because I talked to both the RTA director and the SLOCOG director today about this and said, is there any any possibility of any future ARRESS money or anything that could help us. And basically there's not. And yes, the governor is probably going to veto that bill that would have provided a little bit of money. So there's really nothing. There's nothing going to be coming in. And quite honestly, when I told them what we were talking about in eliminating dial-a-ride, the RTA director was very concerned because he doesn't feel that the runabout has enough funding to be able to pick up the slack that will be there because of the loss of dial-a-ride here. We in San Luis Obispo are the only two cities in the county that use all of our transit funding for transit. The other cities are still using it to fix potholes and things, although they may not be after this year. So we are the ones who are going to see the serious ramifications of all of this. The one small ray of hope that I was offered by Mr. Ed King at RTA, he said that the Cambria district has a senior bus service, and it operates with 35 volunteer drivers. It works Monday through Friday from 9 to 4:30. They have one employee, a part-time scheduler, who works Monday through Friday from 8 to 11. And they do have a subsidy from RTA for fuel and maintenance of the vehicles, but the vehicles are the own personal vehicles of the drivers. And they provide this. Insurance is provided by the CSD in Cambria. So it cuts the expenses quite a bit, but you do have to have a really good volunteer group to act as your drivers. I don't know if that's something that would be workable here. It's the one thing that he could suggest that might be able to replace the door-to-door service for those that need it. Because I agree, there's no way that somebody that lives up on Ironwood even is going to be walking down to the bus to get the bus, get their groceries, come back, and walk up the hill. It's not going to happen. And I totally understand wanting door-to-door service for your kids these days. Anyway, that's the information that I gleaned. Sorry it doesn't help any, but go ahead.
So the only other public transport, well, it's privately. It's a bit.
I'm sorry, Noah, go ahead.
Okay, I think we all are in agreement there just because of our conversation at the last goal-setting meeting. We really have that as a priority. At the same time, I'm finding myself very uncomfortable with the thought of terminating the dial-a-ride service or something that offers that sort of opportunity for members of the community that really have come to depend on a demand-based door service that is really, in their eyes, an essential, vital service that we've offered. And we've been very fortunate up to this point, but it's pretty clear right now, especially with the budget situation, that we have to make some adjustments. I'm, at this point, uncomfortable with what appears to be a prioritization of a trolley concept above the dial-a-ride concept. And I would hope that we could investigate other options to keep this dial-a-ride demand-based service going. And actually, it's interesting that you brought up the Cambria study because I was up there last weekend and happened to see that they do, besides having the community-based shuttle, they call it the Cambria Community Bus, which is operated by volunteers using their own cars, they also have a community bus service that's basically similar to our dial-a-ride service, where they have a paid dispatcher, part-time paid dispatcher, and volunteer operators for their buses, which are smaller than ours, so their volunteers don't need a Class B license. But they're operating this service, which is a Monday through Friday service. I believe it's 9 to 5. Where they will pick you up, take you to where you need to go, and return you. That's a $40,000 a year program that they're offering. And it was interesting that I talked to a couple of the different members that have organized the service, and it's very true. It's been organized by community groups, volunteers saying, look, we see this as a need. We have limited funds, and we're going to find a way to make this work. They're operating with some assistance from the TDA funds from the state, about $25,000 of that. The remainder, $15,000, is actually coming from a once-a-year mail-out fundraiser that covers that entire $40,000 a year budget for the program. As I talked with the main organizer, he said that he's been observing our program for the last number of years and talked with people in our community, and their goal was eventually to establish something similar to ours. And everyone's realizing that that is probably not the direction, and it's kind of ironic that here we are, and I'm looking at this concept, this format, as very intriguing, and I'd like to see us spend a little more time and investigate the potential of this happening here, because I really don't see the concept of our community abolishing or terminating a demand-based service. It's to me not a feasible option, and I'm not ready to go there. I think we need to spend some more time to look at some options, take a closer look at the Cambria Community Bus case study, and be really careful about where we go from here. And it's interesting to think about working with our existing contractor and considering introducing some a competitive element to it, because with the changes that we've seen with the economy, it would be in our best interest to make sure that we're getting the best deal if we decide to stick with the existing contractor in somewhat of the same format. So those are my comments for now.
Carla?
I could probably simplify it and just say ditto, because it's pretty much on the same page. I'm not really feeling good about cutting the dial-a-ride service and putting the trolleys in play. I'd rather do it the other way around and cut the trolleys and just fund the dial-a-ride and not run trolleys at all. And that brings me to a concern that we still have a trolley on order, plus three that we have here and one that's for sale. And so we're stockpiling these vehicles, trolleys and dial-a-ride vehicles, and challenged with how we're even going to run one of them. So this is a bigger problem than just that. It's what are we going to do with all these vehicles and maintenance and staffing and just storing them. It's not a good scenario. So I would totally agree with Mr. Smuckler in wanting to look at some other options, that, as you also expressed, Mayor Peters, for the Cambria-type system.
Okay. Benny?
I totally agree with the audience and with my fellow council members. This is not a service that can be cut. I see it as essential. It's one that our people depend on and have assumed that it will be there for them because they are immobile. And a fixed route won't work for that. So whatever kind of direction we need to give back to staff to negotiate with our... This title does not tell you what's happening here with the conclusions that were brought to us. So... for sure, there's no way we're discontinuing service tonight, I would hope.
Mr. Alexander's email was not addressing the main loss. He was just addressing the gap.
And I
in
thought
service.
That's what you were asking, the,
no,
the
no.
gap.
No,
oh,
I'm talking about the $171,000 that we don't have anymore.
Yeah, that's the part that needs to come back, I think, with but some kind of volunteer program
them.
Or another kind of... I think if we talk to our provider, he might come up with some of his own things. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's going to come to be some kind of public-private volunteer program that we're going to come up with. It's going to be something novel. And I don't think that's for us to make that kind of conclusion. I think we just need to say to staff, we're not happy with this direction. We want to keep this service.
It seems like, yeah, we are in agreement that we want to avoid utilizing accumulation funds to achieve this goal. And we want to prioritize the dial-a-ride above the trolley service. That's what I'm hearing from the council. I'm not sure what other direction we need, but to request staff to bring back some alternative concepts based on those wishes. And I understand that there's been work.
They don't equal each other. That's the problem. How much does the trolley service cost?
The trolley service for next fiscal year is about $57,000.
And
that's the summer program.
And dial-a-ride is $300-something.
And a current fiscal year is about $379,000. So
difference.
It will be higher
Where
than
do
that
you
next
come up with the difference?
But they don't address the same need. They're completely different.
I know
goals.
That. I understand that. But you can't drop a $50,000 thing to fund a $300,000 thing. It doesn't work. Where do you want staff to pull $250,000?
They get to be creative and go talk to Cambria. They get to talk to the provider. They get to figure that out.
And another important element to this, when I talked with Cambria, I mean, it's in part managed or supported by government, but it's also very much community-driven. And I'm happy that the Public Works Advisory Board was able to participate in this first discussion, but we really, at this point, we need support of the public to come to action and to help us identify how we could manage this and continue the service. I think we all realize the level and standard that has been taken us to this point, which has been amazing, is not probably achievable, but some element that gives us at least a satisfactory service perhaps is, and that's where we need to be looking.
Okay. First of all, I will address the notice situation. I had a call from people who are regular users of Dial-A-Ride this morning, and they said they'd known about it all along, and they did understand. And, in fact, they said they'd much rather have the fixed route. However, they are both physically capable of walking to the fixed route pickup place. So, but the word did get out. People are very well aware. We announced it at our meeting. So I think people are aware of how serious this is.
And something else I'd like to point out, too, is our staff did a very good job of recognizing the challenges of the community most affected by this sort of an adjustment, to actually attend meetings and have their voice heard. And I just wanted to appreciate you for recognizing that and organizing those meetings as much as possible about in a way that is accessible to them. And, you know, this is hard for everyone, and I just hope that we give our staff direction to go forward and evaluate some other options tonight.
Okay, Rick.
I was just wondering, did Cambria offer you any insight into, I mean, you just can't take volunteers. You have to do records checks. If you're going to be driving kids around, you got to do background checks, you got to do DMV checks, you got to do criminal checks, all these other issues. How are they addressing the costs involved with such things? If you're hiring 35 people, you get, 10 of them burned out in 6 months, you're going to have to constantly be replenishing this volunteer supply that, you know, we always talk about volunteers, but I don't see a lot of volunteers stepping up for things.
Well, I actually disagree with you on that, Mr. Grantham. I think you'd have to look no further than our police department and the amazing work that our volunteers there are doing, actually operating city-owned vehicles and taking very important roles in the community.
Well, I've been a volunteer with them for 12 years.
Yeah, so and I thank you for that.
It takes committed people to do those things. And, you know, we have about 25 of them in the police department, but I'm talking about this type of a situation.
I agree with you, Councilmember Smuckler, in the sense that I think we have an underutilized senior community at the senior center that would probably be willing to help get involved also. And I don't think we were so much talking about transporting, and maybe I misunderstood the youth as the seniors. So I would be a little less concerned about some of the requirements that might be different with younger children that people would be driving around.
Yeah, and it's tough for us. So that's actually two different functions there. And there are challenges with that. I talked with the main organizer there, and he offered his time in as much capacity as was necessary if we wanted to find out more about what they do. And what they've done with their bus for the community shuttle is actually they've contracted with RTA for the management and maintenance of their bus. Mm-hmm. He said there is a challenge of keeping quality volunteers in that position, but that they've never been short in the time that it's been in operation. He also mentioned, and this is important, that the focus is medical. The priority is medical trips for their community. And they actually, their bus, they allow their buses twice a month to move out of the community, and once a month it goes to Paso, and once a month it goes to San Luis Obispo, they know exactly which day that is. And I mean, that's a lot of risk in itself, but they're still able to do that because it's such an important service for the community.
I would also add, since I'm sitting here listening to this, back to the youth, I've had children in the school system here for 19 years. And as San Luis Coastal has been faced with budget constraints through the years, we have always utilized parents to transport the youth from the schools to field trips and many things, and it's very successful there the same way We take in proof of insurance. I've been doing it for 19 years, driving kids, groups of kids. We do it with 4-H, lots of youth organizations. So there is a way to incorporate all that and do it in a safe, good way.
Okay. The immediate concern that we have here, though, is we're going to run out of money to fund this by May, right?
Correct. If you do not take any other action, find alternative funding sources, after a 4-week noticing period that you would want to do for the public, the Dial-A-Ride service would stop in May for the remainder of the fiscal year.
Or how much would we have to start paying out of the accumulation fund, which nobody wants to do?
Well, as mentioned in the staff report, the option for the general accumulation fund to be used for the full funding loss, the second cut would be $24,607.
To get us through this fiscal year,
so the remainder 3 months. The other option that was presented was to start whatever funding or transit service changes that would be approved for next fiscal year, start those earlier, start them in May rather than in the proposed October date, and you would see some cost savings between the Dial-A-Ride going away and the additional fixed route service being provided, and there would be a small difference of about $5,600 that would not be made up between that those cost savings that could come from the general accumulation funds.
Okay,
those are the council's three main options at this point.
To get us to the end of this fiscal year,
correct,
would cost $24,000 from the accumulation fund. To go beyond that without something in place, then we're talking about funding the whole thing again, right?
If you are not making any changes at this point, it's the regular Dial-A-Ride service, and you're looking at, we haven't started putting the budget together yet. That was going to be next week. And you're right now the current operating budget's about $379,000. So the funding increases would be in relation to fuel, which prices are rising, the contractor cost, which there is a CPI adjustment in the agreement.
The loss of gas tax.
The gas tax, well, the STA has already been factored in.
Okay.
It would just be this additional loss to LTF funding. So what is anticipated roughly is about $204,000 of LTF available for next fiscal year.
All right, so we'd have to be $150,000 added to it from our general fund. Okay, so that's the risk you're taking in not deciding something quickly. I'm not saying don't, but I'm saying we have to recognize it's definitely going to cost us the $24,000 because we're not going to have another system in place by May 1st. That's a month away.
And I would support continuing that so we have the time, but I'd like the money found somewhere else.
Where? You've got to tell staff where. They're working on a budget right now. We've told them don't take anything out of accumulation. Where? You've got to give them some direction.
I like the 1% idea across the board. If they haven't spent but half to three-fourths, or probably only two-thirds of their budget so far. So I think that they've been very frugal, and this is a service to the community. If they save 1% and they have extra, that can go back. But I don't know that that's a bad thing to do, because this is a service that everyone's depending on, that we all recognize. And if it gets it through the next 3 months, I think it becomes a direction to staff that this becomes top. It's going to be a complicated issue, but it's well worth it because we'll set it in place for years to come.
Yeah, go ahead, Jenny.
If I could just jump in real quickly about the trolleys. The council, with the 1985 surplus trolley, the council has already authorized those funds to be used from that sale for the first cut in LTF that took place in December. So there's nothing there.
And we haven't sold it yet.
And it hasn't been sold yet. With regard to the trolley that's on order from the Recovery Act funds, that is a replacement vehicle to the 1999 trolley. And what would happen with that vehicle is that when the new trolley comes to the city, the 1999 would be surplused and sold. That's the intent, so that we would have three vehicles, not four.
Okay. Well, then I would say rather than doing a 1% cut across the board this late in the budget year, I would like to designate whatever funds we get from the sale of that second trolley to fill this gap. Is that legal if they're ERAS funds?
Well, the new vehicle would be using ERA funds.
Okay, but the old one, because
the old vehicle was purchased. See, the 99, that one was purchased with, I think, a combination of state transit, rural transit fund grant, and a federal 5311 grant.
So that could be used for operations for.
Well, with vehicle or vehicles and equipment that are purchased with federal grants, the proceeds from sales of surplus equipment is to go back into the transit fund. So the sale of the replacement trolley, the 99 trolley, we would be looking at putting that back into the transit fund. The timing of that would not, I mean, the vehicle has just been ordered. There's a six-month production schedule. We won't actually be taking possession of that vehicle until next fiscal year. And so then the sale of the 99 would not occur until next fiscal year.
And can we just stop that order?
That order is grant funded. Mm-hmm. The city is not out dollars, so whether we proceed forward with that order or not, it doesn't really affect the budget picture.
Right. There's no local match to this. It's 100% Recovery Act.
Madam Mayor, I would suggest that you can, if you've got some money coming in from the sale of the second trolley, certainly what you can do is, and we've done this before, we did it with the Harbor Fund a number of years ago. The General Fund made a loan to the Harbor Fund, to be repaid. So you can do that sort of agreement to get us through that. That I would just caution you that we certainly don't want to move into the next fiscal year, though, in the same situation. We need to make some tough decisions in the very near future, and with this as well as the rest of your budget.
Okay. Well, so whatever motion is put forward, then I would suggest that we do that. We anticipate the sale of that vehicle to refund the $24,000 that's going to get us through this fiscal year.
And if I could add, the sale of that vehicle may not yield that full amount.
I'm sorry, what?
The sale of the 99 trolley may not yield the $24,000 that you're looking at.
I think we'll hope it will.
So I just wanted you to be clear on that. So there may still be a funding shortfall after that.
Okay. All right. Who wants to make a motion?
I'll make a motion. I move that we direct staff to investigate alternative dial-a-ride program delivery models, including public-private partnerships and volunteer-based concepts, while identifying a funding option not utilizing accumulation funds and prioritizing demand response service over the trolley service.
Money to come from? With the money to come from the sale of the trolley?
Yes, with the money to come from the sale as much as to as a high level as possible from the sale of the 1999 trolley.
Second.
Okay. For clarification on that, for the money to fill this $24,000 gap, right, not to support the next project or whatever it is. Okay, you can bridge it. Does that make sense?
Do you want to clarify what Mayor Peters just added to your motion?
Yes, I do. You want me to repeat it?
No, just that part. Just that part.
Okay, to cover the $24,000 gap in funding for this current year.
Okay, discussion?
And I would make the assumption that we could borrow from the accumulation fund, but we would repay it back if the timing doesn't work.
And bringing it to the Public Works Advisory Board, I'm presuming that is what you're thinking before coming back to council at your second meeting, because that would occur, I think, the week prior to your second April meeting.
Yeah.
If you can get it together.
Because that's about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I'm just concerned about the timeline with staff. I mean, this is.
Well, it'd be an update.
Okay, so progress report.
Yeah, progress report. Yes, definitely.
And I would suggest call on those community members who may have knowledge about this and get them in on the process.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay, 4-1. Mr. Grantham opposed. All right. I wanted to move up item B3 because it's the only reason that Mr. Woods is staying, and I think we can handle it pretty quickly. So, okay, we'll do that one too. So let's move, if council agrees, we can move up B3. This is introduction of an ordinance to provide rules and regulations of the Morro Bay Skate Park requiring any person riding a permitted coasting device at the Morro Bay Skate Park to wear helmet, elbow pads, and knee pads. Joe?
Good evening, Mayor Peters and Council. In August 2009, Council adopted Ordinance 551. 551 requires any person riding a permitted coasting device in the Morro Bay Skate Park to wear a helmet, elbow pads, and knee pads. Unfortunately, Ordinance 551 amended in references and amends an outdated version of Chapter 10. We were amending it. It was Chapter 10.54. Since you adopted 551, Chapter 10 was rewritten in full force of the police department, and somehow my numbering got a little bit out of the queue, as they say. So 551, we're presenting 554. Which repeals Ordinance 551 and amends the newly adopted Chapter 10, specifically Chapter 10.76. The mandating of those who to wear their helmet, elbow pads, and knee pads benefits not only the participant, but also fulfills the state mandate as well.
So basically, we're changing numbers, not what it says.
Yes, what you adopted back in August, 551, 554 is exactly the same, other than the numbering in the place in the Muni Code.
Okay.
Yeah, so basically, it's just a cleanup. When we went to codify our ordinances, we were informed that, in fact, we didn't catch this section. It's already been approved by council at a previous meeting, and now we're just correcting it and getting the numbers right. But it was already approved by council at a previous meeting.
Okay. Any questions?
I just have one question that's not directly related to the ordinance itself, but in terms of hours, and since it's an unsupervised, according to the ordinance, area, what kind of hours are available for people to use the park?
Right now, the skate park is available during the operating hours of the teen center.
Which are?
3 to 7 Monday through Friday, and I believe noon to 7 on Saturdays. But I might be a little off on the Saturday.
So nothing on Sunday?
Correct.
Okay. Is there a reason, since there's really no supervision, why it has to be related to the teen center?
Through investigation and in collaboration with other cities that have skate parks, they feel it's very important to have the facility, the ability to lock it down. It eliminates a lot of extracurricular activities in the evening and other hours when it's not open. So it's basically just to help facilitate the usage and keep the place safe.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yes, I have one. On that subject then, is there not a recreation facilities person that works on Sunday that would be able to? I just see that as a, would think it would be a demand time for kids to use that are out of school on the weekend. So isn't there someone that could lock it or unlock it that is on duty Sundays?
We do have maintenance personnel that are on Sundays. I believe the staffing right now is 2. They are very well occupied with public facilities and also cleaned up and breakdown for rental facilities like the Vets Hall and the community center. So the Sunday is can be a very hectic day for the personnel that are here, and I'm not ready to put additional duties on them at this time, but we certainly would be able to look at that.
So I guess maybe I'm not understanding that it requires somebody to actually be on the grounds while it's unlocked, or is it just strictly opening and closing it?
Well, we would maintenance personnel on Sundays would be opening it up if they were to do that at 7 o'clock in the morning and closing it at 3:30 in the afternoon. So I don't know how the hours would help facilitate the need, but like I said, if we were to pursue that, we certainly would look at that possibility.
Okay. But they wouldn't be required to be there.
Correct. It's unsupervised, and the ordinance...
The City of Morro Bay, California, repealing Ordinance 551 and enacting Ordinance 554, adding Section 10.76.035 to Chapter 10.76 to provide rules and regulations for the Morro Bay Skate Park.
All right. Can we keep on going, get our last public hearing done? Can't, not until after public hearing. Okay, this is B2, Draft Antennas and Wireless Telecommunications Facilities Ordinance. Rob.
Yes, pursuant to your direction, we've cut out from your entire zoning code that was previously approved and bringing forward to you the, was it supposed to be you? Did you mean my Rob or that Rob?
No, it was that Rob.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Well, he's the one that did the staff report.
I'll defer to Mr. Schultz if he seemed to be, I didn't know I was that good of a ventriloquist.
Well, I guess I'll chime in. He did write it, huh? I forgot there's another Rob. Sorry about that.
We just haven't called on you enough tonight. You're feeling the loss, right?
But pursuant to your direction, we did approve the entire zoning code and went through that entire process. And, of course, we all know where that is waiting, and that's waiting up at the Coastal Commission for approval. Based on your direction, we've now taken this out, cut it out of the herd, as I think the quote that's been said, and has brought this forward for your review. A couple cautionary items, though. If there are no changes to it, then it can just be brought back without any other CEQA document, because you did your CEQA document for this already when you did the entire ordinance. If we are going to make changes, major changes or anything, though, then we would have to go back through the process with the Planning Commission and bring it back to you for first and second reading. So a little bit longer process. I'm not saying you can't do that, but just from the standpoint when staff went over it, if there are no changes, it makes it much more simpler from a CEQA process, and we can use our CEQA document that we use for the entire zoning code.
Now the other Rob.
I really don't have anything to add to that, except that we have one of our associate planners here, Janine Lahotsky, to answer any questions that you might have regarding the ordinance and to make sure that we receive, take notes and receive proper direction on which way we go on this.
Okay. Any questions for staff?
I have questions.
Okay.
My first question is on the second page. It's under the purpose, Mr. Schultz, I think, rather than Mr. Leivick. It talks about providing incentives for well-designed. I'm curious what about those incentives are.
I'm sorry. Where are you, Betty?
I'm on the this page.
Page 2.
And it's up here. Has
gotcha.
A through E. And I look for incentives, made me nervous that there's incentives, so I was wondering what the incentives were.
I believe it's, I'll make an attempt to answer that one. The incentives are to allow the antennas to be placed would be the incentive for a well-designed and appropriate located wireless communications facilities.
So it's not like we're giving them benefits.
No, we're not giving them any benefits. It's allowing that antenna to be placed.
Okay. On the page 3, under residential districts, A1 and 2 talk about restrictions in residential areas, commercial areas. All of these are permissible. Language under 1A and 2A both use the word is permitted, but that same language is not in B and C and D, but I think it probably is supposed to be there, and I think that's probably just a grammatical thing. It's probably not a change in text, so that's just something we could fix.
Would that be considered an edit rather than a change? So that's okay.
Okay,
all right.
Good. And I have a little discomfort with readily visible definition.
We wrestled with that also. That you're talking about page 4. That's probably what staff, when we reviewed it, had the most difficulty with reviewing some other ordinances. Kathleen said that she found that definition quite a bit with no real definition. I think it's going to give discretion to the council, but it's the same thing we wrestled with too. What is really readily visible? And I mean, we'd have to come back with a cleanup if we want to define that better.
It's pretty nebulous for me, and I would rather than number three under that same section. It says that will allow facilities in our districts if they're not readily visible, but I'd rather restrict our
Is that another edit, or is that a change?
I'm not certain.
If we're making it consistent with the rest of the document. And it was just an oops.
Don't think so. And then I think my last comment is on page 5. It talks about building height, that we will allow them above 15 feet above the height limit in certain areas. The only place I know of where where that's been done, I mean, the church was done recently, and then I guess there's a hotel downtown that does it, and I was wondering how tall that is above. I'm not in favor of allowing things to be above height limits.
Already existing in our zoning code, we do allow architectural projections, elevator towers to exceed the height, and maybe we should be consistent with that height, that cell phone towers should be above the height of the building.
Because I think those kinds of things you're talking about, maybe 4, 5, 6 feet, but not 15 feet. I think that's extreme.
Is that practical with these kinds of towers? Do they need a lot of clearance, or is 4 or 5 feet sufficient? Mr. Wade.
I didn't think I would speak on this one, but let me express a concern. A lot of these antennas, and John, you may be able to help here a little bit, require line of sight. And so I know from some of our own internal communications equipment, specifically in regards to the fire station project, you may not want to get too aggressive in cutting that down. It may hamper the ability of the facility to perform. So I have no opinion, but I would exercise caution there.
I would need a more specific example than that. I mean, if the fire station needs an antenna, that's for public emergency, and I understand that.
Right.
But for someone to make money off my community and with the visual blight is not understandable.
Yeah, and I don't know. I would read this and assume that it pertains to all antennas, not just commercial.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Schultz, did you get some information there?
The way we deal with those other apparatus that are on buildings, we don't have a set amount of height limit, but does require a higher scrutiny, requires a minor use permit or some other type of process that we go through. So we don't, in our current code, we don't have anything for the chimneys or for the elevators or something of that nature that go above or for architectural facade. We just say it needs an extra minor use permit if it goes above the height limit.
Well, these are going to come to us anyway, or come to the Planning Commission anyway, aren't they? So wouldn't that scrutiny happen?
Yes, that would happen at the Planning Commission level.
Okay.
Yeah, this is really setting just the outside possible limit where we wouldn't even accept an application. But if someone did come in, they do allow the application to be processed at 15 feet, but you still have all the other requirements of camouflaging, and even the minimum functional height would come into effect, and landscaping and other type of requirements.
Good evening.
Hello.
I just wanted to clarify that there are some certain instances where the telecom permits would not be seen by Planning Commission. And with regard to what Rob was saying as far as incentives go, there are some instances where minor use permits could be issued for certain types of antennas. And specifically, it looks like the Public Services Director's determination of compliance will be granted with this ordinance
with facilities that in commercial or industrial districts where a facility affixed to an existing building or structure, a new ground-mounted monopole in an industrial zone that is readily visible from off-site, and new alternative tower structures, public safety communication towers 65 feet in height or less, or temporary wireless facilities. And then in addition to that, there's a minor use permit process for a variety of different installations as well. One of them has to do with a facility that's co-located with an existing monopole or support structure, a ground-mounted tower or monopole that complies with a height limit in commercial or industrial district. And in addition to that, there are three other instances where a minor use permit could be issued.
And you're on page 9?
Yes. And then all others would be conditional use permits, which would be heard before the Planning Commission.
And in regards to the co-locating, that was an issue down at the church that supposedly the first antenna that went up said, like, is my concern.
Just thinking out loud here, perhaps they would be in violation of their use permit when they don't allow that co-location to occur.
Yeah, that would be our only way. But chances are what happens is they say, well, technology's changed and we don't have the ability to do that any longer, and then we would have to go out and hire an expert to tell us, yes, you can. I mean, that's the dilemma we get into when these do. But we certainly can write into the permit that's issued that they have to co-locate, and that's about all we can do to try to ensure that it does happen. And then you could revoke a permit.
I like that idea.
And is that something that has to be in the ordinance? I mean, are we getting – okay. That's just something we do in the permit process. Okay. Anything else?
I'm not in a hurry to pass this. I'd like to see some changes made. It's okay with me if that happens.
What changes?
It makes me nervous.
So far, we've covered everything.
Well, the tightening of this thing, I think the co-location language needs to be changed. The kind of MUPs that can be done, without – public review through the I'm not sure if you know, I think we probably have to have that legally.
If I may, this wasn't to be passed tonight. We still have to bring it back for first reading and adoption. The only thing that I just cautioned you about is we might come back after your changes and say we've got to do the CEQA process again, depending on how many changes are being made.
But if we're tightening it up, it shouldn't be an issue rather than loosening it up?
Certainly will.
Okay.
There's certainly companies that will be watching it that'll say that they weren't entitled to their due process either for those ones that want to provide wireless. Mm-hmm. So you still have to provide them the CEQA.
Okay.
So what other changes?
Well, I'm concerned about the definition of visual, but if that's the best that all communities are doing, readily visible is so nebulous. It seems that anybody can work that to their advantage in either direction. But I don't know if that's the best thing that's out there or not.
I don't think staff's happy with that either, so we could research that and what other issues you bring back and bring back that changes for first reading and determine whether the CEQA process is going to be necessary.
All
what
right,
other
well,
changes are there?
Did you have another one?
I just wanted to mention that one of the findings required in order to approve a wireless facility has to do with let's see, it says the applicant has made a good faith and reasonable effort to locate the proposed wireless facility support structure other than a new ground-mounted antenna, monopole, or lattice tower, or to accomplish co-location. So that's an incentive for them to co-locate. Mm-hmm. They have to make a finding. We have to make the finding for them.
Good. Okay. Any other comments or changes? And do we... If there is anything, do you see anything here that would trigger another round with the Planning Commission and everybody from what was said?
Not right now.
Okay.
Did you have a public hearing?
Oh, I'm sorry. It was a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this, please come forward. Sorry about that.
John Barta, I was debating whether I should be a schmuck and let you get away without the public hearing and then raise the issue
No, these guys won't let that happen.
Just bounce up here and say, hey, you know. Don't count that against my time, Bridget, please. You know, all radio wave energy is not the same. And back in World War II, radar was a big thing, and the Battle of Britain and all that stuff. And in the wake of World War II, they discovered a lot of dead birds in front of radar installations. And that led some to say, what's happening to these birds? And what they discovered was that the birds were dying from the radar frequencies that were being used. And the civilians in the 1950s, they invented what were called radar ranges. If you'll remember microwave ovens, that was the original name of them, was radar ranges. Well, the kinds of energy that are being put out by most microwave facilities, you're thinking of cell phone towers, I know, and police towers. Those are omnidirectional antennas. That is to say, the energy goes out in all directions. But there are some antennas that are different frequencies that are much more dangerous, that are like radar, and that, in fact, will set off radar detectors. And we do have some of those here inside Morro Bay. In fact, we've got them right over the fence over here inside the plant. These are directed beam microwave links that go between PG&E facilities. And I don't know where else they are in the community, but I know there's definitely one right over your fence out here in the back. Those do have the possible risk of some kind of public health risk. And I'd hate to see something much more serious kind of directed beam energy be treated the same as omnidirectional radio antennas. And I do think that should be included in the discussion, either to cut it out and put it as a separate
item. Address those and come back with a first reading.
Second. Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. Which one's Dylan waiting on? One of the consent agenda items. Anybody want to pull anything from consent?
A3. And A2.
Does that cover the water?
All right. All right. May I hear a motion approving A1?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. All right. A2, Noah.
Yes, A2. I was actually mostly pulling this. This is the item on the North Main Street bike lane and the funding from the stimulus to help us achieve this goal that's been around for a long time. And I really was just pulling this to give Mr. Lifick and his department kudos and thanks for his work on this and really addressing a big project that we've had in the community for a while. And I just wanted to say, great job.
Thank you.
So with that, I move to approve A2 if there's no other comments.
Okay. Could you include A5 in that as well, because I forgot to say that one?
Okay. I amend my motion to include A2 and A5.
Thank you.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. And Rick, A3.
One thing that stuck out on A3, I know of some people that in this town that undergo dialysis treatment on a regular basis. And on 2 of 3, the bottom paragraph, and I spoke with Dylan earlier about this, but I think, where did he go? Oh, there he is. I'd like for Dylan to talk about this particular problem and what the time frame is for this and what people that undergo dialysis, what their concerns should be, and if ROs would help in this situation.
That's a tall order. I'll speak to it a little bit. Normally, and when a community converts over to a chloraminated water supply, it's a mixture of chlorine and ammonia. It's of particular risk to people on dialysis because it can pass through the membrane and accumulate in their blood. That's about as far as my knowledge of it goes from a health perspective. I'm getting a little far afield from engineering. I work with mechanical systems better than organic ones in a lot of cases. But there's a risk there. And so people who are on dialysis have to be aware of that. I don't know how specifically they manage that process, but they do have treatment available to it, and they need to be aware of that. Normally, that's the water supply for our city. So 99% of the time, we run on a chlorinated water supply. During the last several months, since the state water shutdown, we've been running on a free chlorine residual. and that leads to more taste and odor complaints. I think people are more likely to notice the chlorine than the chloramine. And so what we'll be doing here in the next few weeks is probably starting in about April 1st, we'll be making that switch back. And so people who are on dialysis need to be aware of that. Beginning on or about April 1st, we'll be switching back over to a chloramine residual, and they'll need to take precautions.
Because of HEPA regulations and privacy laws and health, you know, health records, things like this, we can't contact the dialysis center and say, okay, give us your addresses of people in Morro Bay so we can notify them. But I think certainly the least we can do is notify the dialysis treatment facilities to notify their Morro Bay clients about what's happening and what the risks are and what remedies can be taken so they don't have to have adverse reactions compounding what they already have.
Mr. Grantham, I would add to that any specialty doctors could be contacted as well, could they not?
Well, really just kidney dialysis patients. The dialysis centers that treat people in our area need to be notified, I think. Because a lot of these folks go for kidney problems that aren't on dialysis.
Okay. Any other comments on that one?
Yeah. Well, are we directing staff to do that? Is, I mean, Mr. Grantham said
I assume in a motion that that's what's going to happen.
Okay.
So. Noah?
Yeah, I just had a comment and that today is World Water Day, I guess. And, you know, it's an important issue all around the country and the world. And I did want to recognize that with the help of some rains, we achieved some significant conservation in the month of February, and thank the community for responding to our call to action on that. And there were some comments made earlier about the state water deliveries and
conservation tips.
Thank you. Yeah, I think the assumption is when it rains, all that goes out the window.
I have one comment or request that I'd like to add to the motion, and that is you said in there that you would, at this point, you don't need to raise fees, and if there was a financial issue, you would be dipping into reserves. And I would hope that you would contact contact the council before you did that.
Yeah, I don't anticipate that we'll need to. The concern is that I don't have a really good feel yet for a brackish water reverse osmosis system and what our operating costs are because we're still in our first operational period. So I haven't replaced all of those chemicals. I haven't kind of figured out some of the replacement costs on that. And so what may happen is in this year's operating budget, it may run a little bit larger than we thought it was going to. I'm not sure that it will, but I wanted to throw that in there just sort of as good measures that, you know, it's difficult to predict some of this before you get in there and actually get your hands on it and get some runtime with it. So we'll be preparing better numbers, and in our budget next year we'll have better numbers for what it would cost to run this facility. We're still working on those, though.
Go ahead.
Well, Carla brought up the part about conservation, and here we're saying that next month we're getting having less reliance on Choro and Morro, and we're talking about lifting mandatory conservation measures. So I'm not really in favor of that.
Yeah, I'm not in favor of lifting that.
But anyway, I guess we'll when we get next month's water usage, we can make a better determination. So I would move for approval of A3 and including in that direct staff to contact kidney dialysis services in the county and have them notify Morro Bay users the potential that we are using chloramines to reduce the taste and odor and what the potential problems to kidney dialysis patients might be.
Second. Discussion. Just the very last part of that. Do you feel qualified to say that to a medical professional?
Yeah, there's some good sort of public health announcements on that subject. And we've done that before.
Okay.
When we switched over originally back in the 90s, we had to do a full-blown outreach campaign. So, yeah, there's information to that effect that we can put out there.
Okay.
Thank you for asking, though.
All right. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, we'll take a short break, and we will come back with our final items. Okay, we can all get back to our seats. All right, my first question is on item D1 is consideration of contract extension with MV Transportation. Rob, given our previous discussion here, should we just continue this item? Is there any point to discussing it?
Yes, I'd continue it also.
Okay, so continue it to the second week in April. At the same time, we're going to come back with an update, and we can continue it again if we need to. All right, I would move we continue item D1 to the second meeting in April.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. Item D2, authorization to hire a second in command for the police department. All right, and this one, Andrea.
I will start. Again, good evening, Mayor and City Council. Tonight, staff is recommending that you authorize the refilling of the second-in-command position for the police department. As you know, the second-in-command provides a highly complex staff assistance to the chief, requiring considerable experience and judgment in the interpretation and application of rules, regulations, policies, laws, and ordinances. As well, considerable latitude is permitted for the independent action by the second-in-command within the framework of the department, the police department policies and procedures. The second-in-command is also an important link to the sergeant and corporal supervisory staff at the police department. The position is responsible for improving operations, decreasing turnaround times, and streamlining work processes. As well, the second-in-command is very important for retention and recruitment of staff. We've attached for you to the staff report a comprehensive list of the essential duties and responsibilities of the commander position, as well as specific to the city of Morro Bay. I won't review this item line by line, but it is there for your reference. Also, we've attached a history of the second-in-command position within the city of Morro Bay Police Department. As you know, we're keenly aware of the financial situations and constraints that are affecting all cities at this time, including the city of Morro Bay, as we're well aware after our goal-setting process. As a result, an extensive review of the second-in-command position has been made to determine the best recommendation we can provide to the City Council with the anticipated vacancy. Staff has attached a chart which provides the cost of the commander versus that of a sergeant and an administrative sergeant. In reviewing this cost to both our police chief and our commander position, or our second-in-charge, we have changed the restrictions, and thus we would suggest that the second-in-command live no more than 30 miles or 30 minutes from the city of Morro Bay in order to receive a take-home vehicle. Number three has been an issue, and we would suggest or provide you the option of having the second-in-command position report to work in uniform at least 2 days each week and respond outside the office when there are multiple incidents or a shortage of patrol officers. And the fourth option that we've provided to you this evening is have the second-in-command alter his or her work schedule periodically to work during the weekend. While staff believes there is a significant need for the second-in-command at the police department, it's certainly possible to make some amendments to the existing position in order to respond to the concerns voiced by the public and City Council. These options presented above would certainly change the position of second-in-command and not result in additional general fund costs, as well as address the concerns of the City Council. We do have this evening Chief DeRohan, as well as Commander Olivas here to answer any questions you might have. That concludes my staff report. I'm happy to answer questions.
Okay. Questions for Andrea?
I had one, just the distinction between commander and captain. What does that do ultimately as far as changing anything, or is that more of a...
It's cosmetic. It's cosmetic. It seems like we've talked a lot about it at the staff level, and it seems like there's been a little bit of trepidation with continuing the title of commander. You might recall that prior to that it was a lieutenant. It certainly could be a captain. One of the things I think the police department is concerned about, and Chief DeRohan could probably talk a little bit longer about that, is it's important to have the title so that and it sounds kind of odd, but when you call another department to get information, you want to talk to somebody that's on the same level. So it's important to have, if you're looking for information from the second in command, you wouldn't call it a sergeant or something like that. So it's important to have a title that's commensurate with the duties. And I think any of those titles, captain, commander, lieutenant, all fit that bill. But it is cosmetic.
Is there, I guess,
my question would be, I know one of the concerns is that if you eliminate the position, there's no moving forward career-wise within the department. You'd have to go out of the department to do that. Would that title make any difference as far as that upward mobility possibility?
If I could comment on that a little bit, if you recall back in 2004 when I became chief, we changed the title from lieutenant to commander. It was just a title only. The reason for that was for the recruiting effort, because typically a lieutenant in a larger agency functions as our sergeants do, as a watch commander. And so what we knew is if we, at least we believed, if we recruited for a lieutenant position, we would get nothing but sergeants from other agencies that may not have command level experience. By changing it to a commander, Commander Olivas is a perfect example. He had lieutenant captain management experience with fish and game, and you know, he's made the comment if it was a lieutenant position, he wouldn't even have applied. And so by changing that and having it a commander title, we were able to get applicants from other agencies at the command level that maybe wanted to come to Morro Bay because it's a nicer place to work. So the experience level in the applications rose quite a bit. And that's why the position was changed in title only.
And would it be more attractive to our employees as far as their career advancement to go for the title of commander rather than a captain? Because in other jurisdictions, it's not as high a rank. Am I getting that correctly?
Well, we offered in the staff report, if council was interested in changing the title, we brought up the option of a captain. In your rank structure, typically with LAPD is a perfect example, and some of the larger agencies, your captain is under a commander position. And if council wanted to make some title change, that would be an option. But again, it's cosmetic. It's just a title change only.
For here.
For here.
But in other
yes.
jurisdictions, it may make a difference.
It could, yes.
Okay.
And it would in larger agencies.
Okay. Other questions? Betty?
I need to offer some clarification, if you would, on the distinction between these job description and yours as chief. Like preparing the budget, I would think is really yours, and maybe that position assists you, but that doesn't depend on a title, or it's just whoever's second in command would do that. But ultimately, just as in any other department, that's your responsibility. Like I'm looking at the description here. So I'm wondering. Well, then I'll just take a minute to read this, unless there's something you want to say.
Okay, other questions? Rick, did you have some?
No questions.
Okay. Carla? All right. We want to start with comments while Betty's reading?
Sure. you know, in times past, there was a lot to do in our police department. There were different jobs, different assignments, different interests people could apply for, such as we had a dog. We had a dog handler. The dog would be used in narcotics work. It could be used to help in felony stops when there wasn't backup. We had DARE officers. We had motorcycle officers for traffic enforcement. Pardon me? And court enforcement. Now we have patrol. Now we're in a put-out-the-fire mentality. My normal day is I go to the gym in the morning, I go to City Hall, then I go by the police department. 5 days a week, at least, I'm at the police department. And on weekends, too, when a dispatcher's there by herself, sometimes my wife and I will go get a coffee, and then we'll stop in and we'll answer the phones or something if she's busy with something because she can only handle one call at a time or put an emergency call on a hold. Well, they don't really like to do that, but sometimes when you get multiple 911 calls, that happens. I would say that if it wasn't for this position, we wouldn't have Commander Olivas. And Commander Olivas, I'm sure, is very anxious to put his own footprints on the job. And we trusted enough in his ability and his character to promote him to this very important position, but I want to give him a chance to do that. And I think not having a second in command will severely inhibit his chances of doing that. I also think that people that we have now as, and I'm going to try not to be repetitious and repeat what other people have said, I'll try. But we will lose good folks to other agencies if we do this. I'm a retired peace officer myself. I've been a volunteer with the department for 10 to 12 years. I have an intimate knowledge of what goes on there and the people that work there and their abilities and their strengths. And I think that it would be a morale issue also when you're only going in for patrol. And we're talking seriously now about two-tier benefits, which is going to have an impact on recruitment. Then you look at our pay structure, you know, being the lowest or tied with the lowest in the county. But there's a lot of things we have to combat. Then there would be no upward mobility. So when I look at everything and I look at the retention problems and recruitment problems and fiscal problems, there has to be some benefit here. And the fact that the benefit that we're looking at is not going to be more or a lot more than an administrative sergeant because of the overtime and because of the IAs, and we've averaged at least one IA a year the last 5 years. Some of those have been against sergeants, and the policy states that it has to be one rank above for a person to do an investigation on another officer. So, I mean, to me, it's a real simple decision. I don't think it's going to make a fiscal difference. It may even save us money. But regardless, I'm a strong supporter of our police department and a strong supporter of a second in command to allow the chief to put his footprint on his department and allow him to do his job.
Okay. Carla?
Sure, I'll go next. I did have a question. I'll incorporate it into my comments, I guess. First, I'd like to thank Brian Millard for his time that he made available to provide some insight and talk about the position. And I appreciate the changes that staff brought forward in regards to the just kind of diversifying the position, amending how it exists to something a little different. I do believe that each administrator runs their departments a little for them to come in and do an evaluation of the operations of the department and make recommendations.
That's correct.
I'd be interested in not to get off topic here, but I'd be interested in seeing, and perhaps they might say that we actually need more than we do, and that's very likely, but and I think they evaluate the structures, and they're non-biased in it, and would provide the best, standards, which is what their position is in the state. Mr. Grantham made a comment, down to the basics is exactly what it is, and that's all our departments right now in public safety, and that may not be the best scenario, but I think based on our concerns for our budget, when we're talking about how we're going to keep dial-a-ride service available for our elderly people so it even exists, the cost of the second position is an issue for me. I will support it. I would like to wait, and I would hope that the position wouldn't just be open to inside our department, but to all candidates that might be qualified and interested, and those who are eligible would be able to apply here also. But we should always look for the best opportunities for those positions to be filled. and challenge those that are here working for us already. So I would just like to wait a little, I think, till Commander Olivas were to take over as chief and see what his needs might be, that it'd be a little different from this.
Thank you. And I'm interested in this post-evaluation concept. I think it's worthwhile, and clearly we are at a time of paradigm shift across the board in government and how we manage our revenues. And I'm uncomfortable with the idea that we are in a competition with other community or San Luis County agencies. I realize that that's part reality, but the shift is definitely downward in most communities to their funding operation levels. And we have to be really careful with this decision because it offers a moment to pause and reflect on how we're doing things. And really, the number one goal is to stabilize our budget so we can offer long-term, safe, consistent service, but also employment. And we are talking about potential layoffs on one hand, and so it would seem to me like at this point, if we authorize the commander position to be filled tonight, we're setting ourselves up for a real uncomfortable situation that is kind of undermining our true effort, which is stabilizing the budget for the long term. So I am interested in having this discussion. Again, I'm not comfortable with filling or authorizing the filling of this position. I'm also not ready to say we don't need this position. And I also would agree with Ms. Borchard that I'd really like to give Mr. Olivas the chance to come into the position and be the chief for a certain period of time before we make that decision. I understand as well we'd be losing Mr. Chief Drohan's man hours and time, and so that's putting a real tough call on to Mr. Olivas at the same time. So I want to recognize that, and if there's a way we can help that, then great. But at the same time, overall, the number one goal for me is stabilizing our budget, and if we were to fill this position right now, I think we'd be undermining that. So at this point, I'm hoping we can give ourselves some more time and evaluate alternative options if necessary, and I'm definitely interested in this post-evaluation.
What kind of time are you talking about?
Well, private industry, from what I understand, is when someone is promoted to a new position, you're given a 60 to 90 day period to evaluate and assume that role and then make decisions from there before you make adjustments or backfill. So to me, that's a private industry standard, but it's also a standard that's out there. Might be a place to start the conversation.
How long does a post-evaluation take? How do you request that? How long does it take?
Generally, post will do an evaluation after a new chief has come in and taken over. That's one of the criteria. The same that they'll offer team building workshops, you know, when a new chief comes in and takes over.
How soon after? I mean, like 60 or 90 days or right away?
I don't think there's any specific time frame. But if I could just make a comment, if you straddle a brand new police chief without that second command for that period of time, it's going to be very, very difficult. And it takes that long to recruit a command-level position like that. So I would really strongly encourage you not to wait. And if you're interested in having posts come in and do an audit, that's fine. But I would not recommend, you know, putting off decisions like replacing the second command till an audit is done.
Okay, Rick.
Question. Hypothetically, if you were to promote somebody in-house, we're still talking 3 or 4 months. If you have a body of people that you're picking from and you decide that this guy from another agency or girl is the person you want, then it's going to take that 3 or 4 months that they're involved in the initial process, and then you have to then do a psych and background on them since they're not part of your agency already. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, but the time frame is going to be pretty much the same because they're competing in the same testing process, in-house people and outside people. You are correct that there might be there will be a little additional time for a psych and medical and a background, but the way we do things, we expedite those things, so it would be done fairly quick. But the testing time frame is fairly similar.
And just one other comment I'd like to make when we're talking about this versus private business and things like this. This is a 24-hour a day, 7-day a week, 365 days a year position or job where you don't stop at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and evaluate how the day went and talk about how – I mean, sure, you have debriefs on incidences and things like this, but you don't have that luxury of, you know, stopping everything you're doing and taking a lot of time to evaluate stuff because things are keep happening. So I would just hate to have such a qualified person going into that position with one hand tied behind his back because I think that's what it equates to.
And just to confirm, though, Chief Drohan, when you started this position, you actually went through that same, that very scenario. And we were able to come out of that with the quality chief for the period of time that we had it. And, yeah, it was acknowledged a very tough time for you, but we survived that period.
But how many officers did we have then?
We had... we had a lot more staff, and times between back then and now are changed. We're post 9/11. We have a lot more requirements. We're participating in numerous task forces. I mean, I could go on and on. And when we look at the way we did things, you know, sure, there was an admin sergeant for a certain small period of time 15 years ago, but times have changed since then, and times have even changed since I took over as chief. And back then, when we did the recruiting process.
Penny? A question. On the bottom of page 4 of Attachment B, you mentioned that there's 17 sworn positions and no part-time people. Where do the two, the current reserve that we have and the new one that you're bringing on, how does that fit? Are they considered part of the sworn, or is that a separate category?
Well, the reserve officer that we have is not considered sworn. He only works 2 days a week and only on certain days and only during certain times. Because he's a reserve officer, he's restricted by the number of hours he can work because he's a PERS retiree. And he's been around a long time and he only wants to work certain days and certain hours, so we have to respect that. The second reserve position has been put on hold because of budget situations. It may not be filled.
And the two part-time positions are the evidence technician and the crime prevention officer.
That's correct. We had two other part-time positions that were cut in 2005. I think that's what Councilwoman Windhorst referred to.
No, I was just asking about the reserve people.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
We do have Commander Olivas here. Would you like to hear his thoughts on this?
If he wants to.
Okay. Commander Olivas, would you like to offer your thoughts?
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council members. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I just wanted to first state that it really is a privilege to be given the opportunity to be the next chief of Morro Bay. It is something that I hold in high importance of going outside and opening it up. I agree with that 100%. I think there's a lot of value in that. I think it really builds credibility into the position and acceptance internally. We just did that recently with our dispatch supervisor position and found it very successful. It can prolong it, as the other council members said, because then we have to go into a background, and that could, depending on where they're coming from, That could be more extensive because they could be even from out of state. Atascadero just recently did this with their commander position, and they actually hired their commander from Arizona, from a law enforcement agency in Arizona. Our goal is to get the best person possible in that position. That could be internal. It could be external. So I have no magical formula to offer you on how to do this position without a second in command. I think you can look within this county and statewide to see that the operational model that works for a law enforcement agency that's 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, is a chief and management positions or position. In this county, we are unique. Atascadero and Morro Bay, and Atascadero just recently downgraded from two lieutenant positions to one commander position. We are the only other agency in this county that only has one management position, the commander position, that works closely with the chief. San Luis Obispo, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Grover Beach, Pismo Beach, all the other agencies, and typical in California, have at least one second-in-command position that's in management. I only know of one in this local area that does not, and it's Guadalupe. And I think if you talked with the chief directly and talking with that chief, that creates a lot of struggles internally for the department, as well as their opportunity to outreach to the community. I think it comes down, I see the chief position as the face of the department to the community, but also the head of the department in operations. Most agencies, as I said, have two second-in-command positions. You have an operations and an administration. We have we are unique, and we make it work with one, but the duties are double for that one person. So you've already taken, they would be your right and your left hand. You've already taken the left hand away from a chief to do just operations and administration with one. To take both those away would be a very difficult task. I would like to think that I know what the chief position entails, but that would not be the truth because I've never been a chief of police. I would like to think I would do it well. I hold myself to a high standard, and I think I could accomplish that, but that's going to take time in of itself to stand in the chief's shoes and really find out what that job entails. To do that without a second command, I think it would create a real hardship on myself for managing the department as well as my personal life. So, any other specific questions?
Yes, you're using the term second in command, but you're not specifying necessarily as a commander.
Yes, I did that specifically because I'm talking about other agencies, and all agencies don't have commanders as second in command. I think a good example, I think you've gotten some input on that tonight. I agree with it. The chief is correct. I was a lieutenant for 6 years, and I was a captain for 3 years before I applied for this position. If it was flown as a lieutenant position, I can't say I would not have, but I definitely would have looked at it as a different opportunity. It would have been almost like me coming to a demotion to a new position. The real benefit and the reason Atascadero did the same thing recently in their recruiting that Chief DeRohan did was when you make it a commander title, you get captains, lieutenants, and sergeants to apply for the position. When you make it a captain title, you get lieutenants and sergeants to apply for the position. When you make it a lieutenant title, you get sergeants to apply. So it really broadens your recruitment base, and that's the goal, is to get the best possible person with the most experience into the second-in-command position because they are doing double duty.
In going to those kinds of levels, though, aren't we also talking about a higher level of salary than we would if we were looking at just sergeants and lieutenants?
Sergeants would be different because they're not a management position. And I think we outlined that in the staff report, the differences and the problems that would create with overtime. I could tell you that there's two lieutenant positions in Grover Beach. There's two commander positions to Aurora Grande. Pismo Beach has two commander positions. San Luis Obispo has two captains.
I think we offer other kinds of benefits, like a good community to work in, that have to offset the kind of pay that others might get in other places. So when you come here, you're here because you want to be here. I am very sensitive to the budget issues as well. I understand that we will do something about a second in command. I think the question becomes when and who and what level that is. And I guess I'm open to discussion about that.
All right. First of all, I'm just going to go down the line here. Cost savings is zero. It might actually cost us more if we had a sergeant filling this position because of overtime that the sergeant would get that a commander would not. So, and based on the figures that were sent out to us in an email, the initial savings to the police department budget for a new chief and commander is going to be about $30,000 a year because of the reduction in salary for both of those positions. If you have an administrative sergeant, he could actually make $4,000 a year more than the top step commander position. So cost savings is not an issue because there wouldn't be any, and it could be just the opposite. Morale, I think, is a tremendous issue. I think that we already are stressing our police department to the limit, and we can't keep doing that. We just can't. It's not morally right. It's not community right. It's not people right. They are the lowest paid officers in the county. Even at the highest level, they're the lowest paid officers in the county. To say, well, they want to be here. Most of them can't afford to live here. So wanting to be here is only a matter of wanting to be here until something better comes along, especially if they're right out of the academy, because they're looking for the step up. So they come here, they get excellent training, and then they move on immediately because these are young men, or women. They've got a career ahead of them. They've got families to support. I totally appreciate the people who have stayed here because they love Morro Bay, but we can't expect the top quality people to do that all the time because simply they don't have the financial ability to say, okay, I don't need to look at my career future. I just want to stay where I have pretty sunsets. That doesn't equate when you are raising a family. The recruiting time is going to give us plenty of time to decide whether we want to proceed with this or not and still pull the plug if we have to. So that's not an issue to not decide tonight. It is an issue to decide tonight because otherwise we delay that recruiting time and we put more stress on the department. The title does count, especially in Morro Bay. I don't think that we should demote the title to a lieutenant or captain when actually what they are doing is the commander job. And again, that's something that our current officers can aspire to and hopefully will aspire to. It is an opportunity for them to move up within the department. And this would be the job they'd be doing. So it would be unfair to them to have them, you know, come in, do this commander job, and then if they do want to move again, take a demotion to captain or lieutenant when they've already been doing more than that. So since it doesn't make a difference financially, I think we should keep the title the way it is. Future hires, I think, are going to be very much affected by this, whether there is this level that they can move up to. If it's not there, they're going to go someplace where it is. And we already have a problem recruiting. We know that. Talking about not doing this because we want the new chief to get used to it and decide what he needs, he's already been there. He's already done that. And he did that when we had more officers on the street than we have now. He's been on the street. Who's going to go on the street for the times that he goes on the street now when he's chief? There's nobody to fill in. We can't keep taking away and expect to have coverage. And the calls are mounting every year. They're right. Things have changed. Morro Bay, yes, we are a very safe community, but not that safe. And we know that things have changed. I read the reports. I know how many small petty crimes are multiplying. you can't keep taking away and still provide your citizens with the safety that they deserve and expect. And you have to give respect to the people who are providing that safety. This, to me, is not even an option to not do this. This is what we need for our community. It's what we need for our residents. It's what we need for our current police department to feel appreciated and to know that we're behind them. And as far as I'm concerned, we do this tonight. Know where law enforcement is strong and where it's not. I mean, this just, we can't keep taking it away. We simply can't. And I would move that we authorize the city manager to proceed with the recruitment and rehiring of the police second-in-command position.
Second.
Discussion. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Did you vote?
I know I was getting ready to have a little discussion.
But I... feels like you're just wanting to push this through without
some discussion. You did not offer, so I took a vote. Aye. Was your vote aye or no?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Thank you for saying that. Are you doing that with those differentials
with
in there?
The options, yes.
Is that part of your motion?
Yes.
Could you say those again, please?
Yes, it is with the options suggested in the staff report. No, it's not. I'm sorry, it's not. I do not want option one. I do not want to change the title. But with the other options, which are that...
3 and 4.
Second and... 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
The mileage constraints, the working in uniform, and working on the weekends.
Okay, I would second that.
How does that involve the post-evaluation?
That's fine. Probably be a separate motion. I would be happy to do that, but I would make it a separate motion. All right, so we'll have the vote again. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Well, it's a struggle.
It's yes or no, Betty.
Okay.
We're going to vote, yes or no.
Well, I just want time to think, and I have been thinking, and
discussion is over, Betty. We're in a vote. We have four of us have already voted. Please vote yes or no. If you want to have comments afterwards, you may have them, but please vote.
I think I'll vote no.
All right, that's 3-2 in favor with Smuckler and Winholtz opposed. Now, if you have comments, you may make them.
Yes. I think that a lot of your arguments are good. I think a lot of our arguments on both sides have been good. But when it starts to get into emotional pleas, I feel like we're stepping away from the reality of what's going on. I'm discouraged by the fact that we look at this as an emotional issue rather than as a factual issue. And it's hard on me to be pushed when those kinds of emotions come up rather than let us have some time to discuss and think. And I've talked to the commander, and I appreciate that he did that for me. But there's been no interplay with us about where we are and where we want to go. And I think particularly some of the issues that we raised in terms of the budget, how this might fit with that, it feels just rushed. And so I want to say that that's why that I'm voting no, because I said earlier that I was willing to come to this, but I need to have discussion. I need to see how it fits into the bigger picture, how it fits into the bigger picture of our budget with other departments and what their needs are. This is not our only department, and it's not our only safety department. And so I feel rushed, and I'm sorry that we had to take the vote that way.
Well, okay.
I'd like to make a comment, too, because I'm really appreciative of Mr. Olivas, Mr. Drohan, the whole department, and my vote was entirely based on my severe concerns about where we are with the budget. And ultimately, we're going to have to address that, and I have a real sense of relief that we have passed and authorized this, or you have, as a majority, because I realize there's a lot of pressure there, and I want to see Mr. Olivas absolutely succeed in this position. I have confidence he will. With that said, it's just with the budget situation that we're in, that to me is the overriding concern. So just wanted to make that comment.
Okay. Now, as far as the post audit, is that something that you need us to direct to happen, or is that something that you can, or would it happen if it's a matter of course when the title changes? I mean, when the position changes.
I think Commander Olivas would welcome that when he becomes new chief, to have post come in and take a fresh look. I can't be speaking for him, but we've discussed it, both of us, in the past, and it's something we certainly always welcome.
Which is selection of two council members to serve on the Chorro and Moro Valley Water Rights Ad Hoc Committee. Rob Schultz this time.
Yes, good evening. As been reported in the monthly reports and with many items that have been coming up, the city is facing many difficult issues regarding the Chorro and Moro Basin, dealing with nitrates and dealing with our 11 customers in the Chorro Valley, and also with our water rights complaint that's been filed against the city. It's been suggested that we have a subcommittee appointed by two of the council members to help us through some of the technical meetings. We're meeting on a regular basis, either with the property owners or with other issues, and trying to find additional even sources of water that we're working with through other agencies. So we thought it'd be a good idea if we had that subcommittee appointed and formally put into effect. It is an ad hoc committee, because once we resolve these issues, we'll disband it, so it won't be a formalized standing committee, but it will be an ad hoc committee that can work closely with staff as we work through these issues, so that we don't have to try to report back as often to the full council, but we'll still keep the full council informed, as these issues are vitally important based on your goals and priorities that were just set.
Okay. I'd like to nominate Noah and Carla.
I would accept that, but I would actually prefer that Noah not be on it, because he's already on two other subcommittees.
I appreciate that, and actually I'd have to decline.
Okay.
And so, I would nominate Ms. Winholtz in my state.
All right, but Carla would do it. Okay. Betty, are you feeling able to do it, campaigning and all? Okay. Rick? Any interest from you? Carla said yes, she's willing. She's willing, yes.
Yeah.
She's willing.
Okay, so
and she nominated two. Betty, so we have two.
No, I'm fine
okay.
with that.
All right. Do we need a motion, or is that sufficient? Okay. I move that we nominate Carla and Betty to the subcommittee.
Second.
Ad hoc committee, sorry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. Item D4? Yes. Rick. Okay, schedule an interview date to fill vacancies on the Tourism Business Improvement District, the TBID, and also the Citizens Oversight Committee, which is the Measure Q Committee. And we have so few meetings that we're looking at in the future. Can we combine this with one of our other meetings, since it's just two positions?
If we didn't have a closed session before one of your council meetings, which is a remote possibility, I guess, at this point with all our closed sessions. I'm looking at Bridget. I think we could actually always start closed session a little bit earlier if we had to do a closed session. So maybe you could do an interview at 5:30, and if we had to do closed session, start at 4:30 on a Monday, one of your council
okay.
Mondays.
Yeah.
Would that work for council members?
Okay. All right. So we try that for the first meeting in April.
Well, Bridget.
Oh no, we have to advertise. Got advertised. So second meeting in April?
Is that going to give you enough time?
Is that sufficient, Bridget?
Or you want to go to May?
She's going on vacation.
Let's head the first meeting in May, because it'll give us a little bit of
okay.
time to advertise. Bridget will be back.
We're gonna have those people miss one. Actually, Measure Q won't miss anything. Yeah. T-Bid will miss one.
Right.
So that should be all right. It's all right.
It's very limited for the T-Bid position anyway. So
10 rooms or under.
Yeah.
Hotel.
That'll be challenging.
So it'll be May 8th, Bridget? May 10th.
All right. So that'll be a 4:30 closed session. All right. And that concludes everything ahead of time. Yay. Closing quote tonight is Carla.
Future agenda items?
I'm sorry, future agenda. Future agenda items.
I have a couple.
Okay.
These two are follow-ups from our discussion with the goal setting. One was a check-in if we needed to agendize a reserve management policy for our reserve funds.
Okay. And yes, we all, I think, we're in agreement on that one.
And then the second was, I think, more clerical, but we had discussed this as well, was formalizing the department head evaluation process and the interaction with the council.
That was also, we talked about that being a policy.
Okay. And then the third is a follow-up to the presentation at public comment about the PERC water treatment system that was presented to us in the business forum. And I'm not sure exactly how we do that, but I'd like to agendize a presentation from them for the
way that you can have this presentation or the JPA won't. If the JPA doesn't and the council still did, then you can take it afterwards. But I think it is a JPA decision as a whole anyways.
Okay.
And we can bring that up on the April 1 and schedule if you want to do it as a special
follow-up
meeting, or it would happen at the next one. But it is a JPA, and I think you have to do that first before having it here. But if it's declined by the JPA, then we could take it up on whether to have the presentation just on our own.
Okay, I'm comfortable with that.
A point of order. I have a procedural question for Mr. Schultz. If our meetings are supposedly every month, but we cancel meetings, how do we get things on the agenda for JPA?
In other words, could we put this discussion item on the agenda ahead of time?
Not without knowing what Cayucas's take on this issue is. I wouldn't want us to do that. We usually, staff to staff usually makes that determination, but this is somewhat going to be a little bit of a controversial issue on whether they want to even hear the presentation. So I'd rather have it at the board discussion before staff makes that determination on just to do it.
Can we not poll Cayucas's board and ask them ahead of time?
We could do that. We certainly could do that. Let's see.
All right. Anything else?
Yes. I was contacted by a woman last week who also contacted our harbor department and I believe the NEP and some other people in the county about a farmed fish legislation that Lois Capps is going to or is thinking about putting forward in the House, which I think is the antithesis of what our community would want, mm-hmm. Being a fishing village. And so I'd like to agendize a letter to Lois Capps from the city council suggesting this is not a good idea.
Okay.
And I believe that she's
I think
from
I have an email on that.
As well?
Actually, yeah.
Yeah. So I'd be glad to write that letter and bring it at the next city council meeting.
Okay. I may already have a draft even of it. I'm not sure. I didn't open the attachment yet, so
okay.
I'll find out.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, I would support that, too. Yeah, okay. That was an easy one. Okay. Anything else?
And then my only other concern is, and I spoke with Ms. Luker during break about the state parks issue, but I guess I'd like to leave a space for us to bring back a letter as well to the director of state parks if this is indeed what's going on and how it's hurting our coastal communities, that they're charging a fee that keeps people away. How does that not hurt them as well as our own economies? Mm-hmm. And if it's happening to us, it's happening to all the coastal communities that have state parks. So I guess I'd like to reserve a space, depending on what she finds out, to write a letter to state parks.
Okay. we in agreement with that?
Yeah, I'd like to find out.
To
include what if all the rates have been adjusted, because I think you were talking about hookup rates, and there's limited, so I don't know. I'd kind of like to find out if they adjusted them all.
Okay. All right. That it? Carla, closing quote, please.
I don't know the key to success, but the key to failure is trying to please everybody. Bill Cosby.
Amen. We're adjourned.